Order of business.
Madam Chair, if I may?
Yes.
I was going to make a request if the board is comfortable with this. I may not stay for the entire meeting. And I was wondering if the following action discussion items could be moved up to after public comments, since there are no students here tonight to report to the board. Those would be 8, 10, 14, and 15. Because I would like to be part of the discussion relative to those items if I leave early.
Is there any objection to that?
Yeah. After public comment, if it's okay. After.
So after public comment, we would then move to 8, 10, 14, and 15, and then back up to the ROP report.
Back up to reports number one.
To number one, okay.
Could I recommend, Madam
14
Chair?
14 and 15.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Why don't we just move action discussion after public comment? Because the rest of it is a resolution and public hearings and action consent agenda. Mm-hmm.
Okay, do you want to...
Reports at the end of the meeting, which probably would make us come on.
Well, then, Mr. Spadafore, how do you feel about staying for item 9? Do you think you...
Oh, I'm fine. Yeah, that'll work.
Okay, so then...
That's a good idea.
The proposal, then, is to move the action discussion portion of the agenda to follow the public comment. Okay, we're all in agreement on that?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Approval of the minutes.
I'll make a motion to approve the... minutes for May 26, 2009.
I'll second.
Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So that passes unanimously. Oh, Dr. Matakovich. Dr. Valentine? So then we move to... presentations.
Yeah, you know, it's not often enough that we sort of take a pause in the business of the school district to do something that really is the business of the school district, and that's to recognize the service of our employees to the children of our district, of all employees in our school district. And tonight we have an opportunity to recognize a very special group, and that's the group of people who will be retiring from San Luis Coastal this year and dedicating their considerable talents to items perhaps of their own personal choosing after this. We envy you, and we will miss you also. Mr. Robinette, who would typically carry this item in a board meeting, cannot be here tonight because his daughter is being honored at an event at Morro Bay High School. And the board will recall that we did some changes of the board's schedule to move tonight's board meeting to this particular Tuesday night, and it happened to conflict with the Morro Bay High School event. And as a result, some of the retirees from Morro Bay High School are also tied up in that event, but we will recognize them by name. What we'd like to do now is to ask individuals who are significant to our retirees to come forward and present those retirees and share a few words with the board and with the public about that service. And so if I might, Madam Chair, I'd like to start the evening's festivities by calling Rita Delkiskamp forward to honor a couple of our retirees.
Thank you. Tonight I have the honor and the privilege to honor to present two of our outstanding teachers in our district, and I'd like to call them both forward at this time. Marty Lindholm and Barry Pendley. And I'd just like to share briefly some information about both of them. Marty Lindholm has been in education since 1966. She has dedicated 43 years of her life to educating our youth, both in elementary, as she has done with our students, elementary music, but also junior high school, college, and university instruction. And she spent 15 years here with us, and we are just very thankful that she has done that, and I'd like to present her with an apple and thank her for what she's done for all of our students. An apple and thank him sincerely for his service to all of our students.
And if we can ask the retirees to stay there so that at the end we can honor all at the same time, too. We'd like to ask Arnie Salacci to come forward.
I'm here to honor, first of all, Gary Winch, who was supposed to be here tonight, but just want to say a little bit about Gary. You know, he was with the district for 28 years and was our support employee of the year in 2007, and just I'd never met a person more dedicated to his work and making sure that everything was just, you know, perfect at his school. And his work ethic, leadership, and dedication was just exceptional. You know, he's going to be a hard man to replace, and he's one of the best custodians I've ever had the privilege to work with. And too bad he's not here, because I'd really like to honor him for just, I mean, Gary just always went above and beyond, and just really appreciate everything he brought to our organization. And I'd also just like to mention Matt Zepeda. Irrigation service systems worker, was with us for over 30 years, and you know, we're going to miss him and his expertise, and he couldn't be here this evening. Thank you.
Thanks, Arnie. Can we call Janet Gould up, please? Janet Gould is not here.
Maybe she's late.
Tell you what, why don't we hold off then on the Del Mar until we see if Janet does show up, and if not, we'll do it from here. Kurt Collins.
I would like to recognize Patricia Short. Not only have I had the pleasure of working with her at Hawthorne, but also when I was at Los Ranchos, she worked there. She's been a classroom aide. She's done just about everything, noon supervision. She has always helped in everything that we have available. She just says, sure, I'll be here. In fact, right now we had an employee who had to leave earlier. Her husband was transferred to the Bay Area, and she said, I'll stay till the end of the year and take over her job. So she's just one of those people you can never replace. She loves kids. She's bright. She's a teacher. She's been here for 22 years, and I think her husband Ron is hanging up his spurs, and so she decided to go out with him, and we just will miss them both, and I just have loved working with her. Thank you.
Thanks, Kurt. Will Jones?
Good evening, everyone. I'd like to recognize two of our five retirees tonight, Ann Porter and Mark Lopez. I'll start with Ann. Ann's been at San Luis Obispo High School since 1995. I think that's correct, the 15 years in our school. And over that time, she's taught some classes that have been very popular with students, particularly her nutrition class and her cultural foods class. And one of the highlights of those classes is that every year her students invite staff members down for tea. And it's a great experience. We all get lovely invitations. The students really enjoy the class. Everyone describes it as one of their favorite classes at SLO High School. And I'll particularly miss Ann's strawberry and whipped cream crepes, which are students serve back at Open House every year. So congratulations and thanks to Ann Porter. And Mark Lopez, also retiring this year. And just to kind of put it into context, I like to do this. Sometimes numbers don't really tell the story. But Mark's been teaching at San Luis Obispo High School since Gerald Ford was the president of the United States. So that gives you some idea. And so I think he started teaching when he was about 15, don't you think that sounds like? Mark is described by students as being a quietly passionate teacher about his subjects, which include biology and, again, two of our most popular elective classes, the micro and marine biology and anatomy and physiology, and he's really been responsible for developing those classes. And Mark has been chosen in the past as Teacher of the Year by the students, and I know that Mark actually kind of got into retirement at the end of the second trimester, so we miss him already. And
she worked in private practice as a speech and language pathologist in private practice and through the Department of Welfare Services. She then knew that an extended family lay among us here in the district. She began at San Luis Coastal in 1987 in the secondary schools. She was a secondary specialist in the middle schools and the high schools. That first year at San Luis Coastal, she experienced 5 schools in only 2.5 days of employment per week. Caseloads are a little bit different now. Then she began at Del Mar when it reopened in 1990, where she spent 5 years. And then she moved around the district, serving the needs of students all over our district. She had a very flexible brain. She's been at Del Mar for the past 7 years. Wonderful office with a wonderful view. And she leaves a lot of our extended family at Del Mar and at the district office and all of our students around the district. We know that she'll be back here visiting often with her wonderful grandchildren by her side. Altogether, Linda has worked at 10 different schools in our district. In addition to her wonderful talents that she brings to all of our students, she is a wonderful communicator with the staff at her sites and with her colleagues, the other wonderful speech pathologist group. Additionally, she has served on the board for Camp Happy Talk. It's a camp run during the summer for students with speech needs. She also has been very instrumental in supporting all of the schools and getting donations from the Quota Club for the many amplification systems in our classrooms. We want to thank both her and the Quota Club for this wonderful added access to the classrooms. In closing, I wanted to present Linda with 2 items. One is the new and wonderful developed IEP forms. When she started working, we had 1 page, and now I'm going to present with her, present to her a 9-page IEP form. Forms. They're just new and improved. I'd also like to invite her husband up here, John, who has been her backbone and her support. And I'm going to present him with the graduation certificate and the graduation notification that we provide all of our students when they exit our program. So she has a retirement notification, and we want to thank her for all of her wonderful years and time spent, and you get the wonderful next chapter in her life.
And while Jackie is transporting things out, we'll call Joyce Hunter up.
That is so great. Well, I've got 3 great folks from Sinsheimer to honor tonight. I'd like to have Sue Babcock come up, Bob Savrick, and Kimmy Kaneyama. They're just awesome folks. We know that even as these wonderful professionals, Bob, Sue, and Kimmy, are retiring, we'll be with them once again out in our greater community. Since coming to Sinsheimer, I've considered myself to be both a colleague and a friend to each of these wonderful individuals. It's a real privilege and an honor to honor them today for their many years of outstanding service. It's really hard to think of all the qualities that they have in 2 minutes, but I'd like to describe just a few. Sue, Bob, and Kinney are some of the most admired professionals that we know, truly a title they've earned. They're individuals who always pay it forward with a positive attitude, compliments that are genuine, and a willingness to help. They've earned the respect and admiration of colleagues, coworkers, because of their warmth and caring nature and love from their students and families. In a room full of individuals, they are able to devote their undivided attention to each person, making him or her feel special and important. This is the special gift that they give to their children. Our entire Sinsheimer family recognizes them as invaluable asset builders, true friends, and wonderful educators. If you've ever worked with Sue, Bob, or Kimmy, they're not individuals that you would soon forget. They each believe that a student has a gift to share with the world. Each year, they personally set out to foster that gift. They believe in young people and their worth, and it's about developing and nurturing individuals to become their best. Students adore Sue and Kimmy and Bob and come back to see them years after they've left elementary school. Students are privileged to have worked with these three, have a wealth of uplifting memories to carry them into adulthood. Bob, our community, he and his wife Barbara, just three outstanding individuals changing the lives of children. Let's give them a big round of applause. See if I can do three of these without dropping.
Thanks, Joyce. I'd like to call Karen Lopez up to do the next presentation.
I can't bear to lose them.
Friends, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. I've come not to bury Mr. Kirk, but to praise him for his service to San Luis Coastal and to its students, though he may feel this is much ado about nothing. All the world's a stage, and all the men and women merely players. They have their exits and their entrances, and this man, in his time at San Luis Coastal, has played many parts.
You've been studying.
Took me 4 years, but I got it. As good luck would have it, Mr. Kirk started in the district with the Continuation High School classroom as his stage. At that time, he must have decided, I like this place, and willingly could not waste my time in it, because he stayed on that stage for over 36 years while it moved to a new location at the corners of Pacific and Beach Streets, and then on to its current location in four buildings on Los Osos Valley Road. To quote one of his past principals, he is a cornerstone for the school. Yes. Dan has played many roles, from head teacher to WASC coordinator to English, drama, PE teacher to advisor, and on and on and on. He has made his two passions clear to all who know him, Pacific Beach High School, and if you haven't guessed, Shakespeare. It's fascinating to watch him bring these two together, to see the students as they read the lines and come alive, and as they come back from watching Shakespeare at PCPA, brimming with enthusiasm. Dan has touched the lives of hundreds of students in many ways, students that might not have graduated from high school, students that might not have stayed in school have done so because of him. Students have won awards in writing competitions because of him. He himself has been a role model in writing, winning first place in the 2007 County Writing Competition for his poem entitled What Remains. For him, it has not seemed like forever in a day, but Act 4 of his Pacific Beach career has come, and just maybe he asked himself, can one desire too much of a good thing? Though at this moment, he may want to change his mind and might be saying, I bear a charmed life, and I'll not budge an inch. However, this is the short and long of it. The game is up, and oh, how well you've played it. What's done is done, and done extremely well. What a piece of work this man. How noble in reason, how infinite in faculty, in form and moving, how express and admirable in action, how like an angel, in apprehension, how like a god, the beauty of the world. Mr. Kirk is retiring, and he will be greatly missed. We thank you, we wish you well, and say to you, this above all, to thine own self, be true. Your 35-year pin. There's a story behind that.
I lost my pin.
And he's got it back. And your crystal apple.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Wow.
Thanks, Karen. Don't go too far. Mary Matakovich, could you do the next presentation?
Oh, I knew I was going to cry.
Holy smokes, what a tough act to follow. You know, and I've been following her for years and years. When I first came to San Luis and looked out amongst that staff, and there was Karen. There were eight women on that staff at that time, and she was the youngest, and I was the second youngest. So it's wonderful to be here tonight to be able to recognize you. Come over this way. Don't be so far away. Okay. Karen is a remarkable professional who's made a difference in the lives of our students and our staffs. She has a long career with our school district. She has a quiet, can-do, let's-make-it-work attitude. She's a behind-the-scenes kind of gal, always giving credit to the people she works with and stepping in the background to make sure everything works well. Her career span is great. She started out as a home economics teacher, work experience teacher at San Luis High School. Then she went away from us and became the coordinator of the statewide consumer homemaking education in-service project. She took 2 years of successful at San Luis High School and also at Pacific Beach, a mentor teacher, and also had tons of student teachers. They wanted to work with Karen as their cooperating teacher. So those are successful achievements. Awards: Home Economics Careers and Technology Program of Excellence Award, the State of California. California Home Economics Teacher of the Year. California FHA Hero Teacher of Excellence. All recognitions, statewide recognitions for expertise. All I can say is we've learned a lot from working with you, Karen, and we hope to carry on your remarkable tradition, which is one of commitment and dedication to the students of the school district. We thank you very much.
Thanks, Mary and Karen. Janet Gould, I saw you come in.
Good evening. Three of the members of our Del Mar team will be retiring in June. You heard about our wonderful speech pathologist, Linda Olson. Also, our nighttime custodian, Bill Woods, cannot be here with us this evening, but I did want to recognize him and his many years of service to our school and the children and wish him a healthy and happy retirement. However, with me tonight, I have Mrs. Joan Talca. And Joan is the kind of person who loves to celebrate and honor others, so it's nice to be able to spend just a couple minutes honoring her this evening. Joan is a teacher at Del Mar who will be retiring after 34 years of teaching, 25 of these in Morro Bay. Over those years, Joan has positively impacted the lives of thousands of children with her nurturing approach to educating children and her depth of understanding of curriculum and instruction. She's always given 100%, and she continues to give 100%, as even since announcing her retirement, I still see her in every weekend working and preparing her classroom for her children. In the words of one of her colleagues, Joan is one of the most open, kind, giving hearts that I've ever encountered in 20 years of teaching. She sees the good in every child and can turn four boring walls of a portable trailer into something pictured in Sunset magazine. And if you've seen Joan's room, you know that's true. Whenever a child is asked if they've had Mrs. Talca as a teacher, you know the words before they're spoken by the huge smile on the children's face. Another one of her colleagues expressed that Joan is a true mentor to teachers. She's always helpful not only to our students and staff, but also to all the student teachers and guest teachers that we have on our campus. She's the type of teacher who can turn a difficult class around within a couple of months in the positive approach that she uses to classroom management. She creates a classroom of little ladies and gentlemen. Del Mar is very happy to know that Joan will be retiring locally, and we're all keeping our fingers crossed that we'll continue to see a lot of her, and she's heard me say that a lot. It's really hard to imagine our school without her positive presence, and I just feel so blessed myself as working with her for the last 13 years and learning from her. So thank you for your years of dedication, and you really will be missed.
Thank you.
Thank you, Janet. I wanted to recognize again some folks from Morro Bay High School who could not attend tonight. We mentioned Gary Winch, who also is a Morro Bay participant, but also from Morro Bay High School, Linda Falkenstein, Kathy Spencer-Canepa, Pete Zotovich, principal, and a retiree from Bishop's Peak who could not be here tonight, Tom Boyle. What I'd like to do is if we could all just kind of stand and recognize our colleagues.
Absolutely.
Did we mention Nancy Bagley tonight? Do you know? Well, Nancy Bagley, a career technician from San Luis Obispo High School, also is among our colleagues, and I'd like to give Nancy a round of applause, too, in absentia. Thank you all. With the board chair's permission, I think we'll take a little bit of a break here. There are refreshments, strawberries, and whipped cream in the back, and just a chance to say hello to one another and visit for a few minutes.
And teaching skills with all their students, and the parents had sent that to the board. And there was also an email from Wendy Furchtschneider, who's going to speak tonight on the issue of the homework policy. And there was an email that was shared with the board earlier today also in correspondence. Thank you.
To move Katie.
Okay, I think previously we had agreed that we would move the action discussion items ahead of the reports, but since we have Katie O'Neill from San Luis Obispo High School, I'm wondering, would we like to allow Katie to give her report and then take public comment and then proceed as we had discussed previously? Does that sound good? Okay. Katie O'Neill.
May I just ask that if we wanted to consider moving item 10 to the beginning of the action discussion, we have a number of requests for speakers, and I think that might be more expeditious to get to their input rather than wait until after the budget adoption and the achievement gap discussion.
That's fine. Any objection? Okay, then we'll do that. Katie.
Okay, just making sure it's working. So, pretty short list tonight, obviously, because the month is not as long. But I would just like to say that we had a great 24-hour relay. I had talked about it before, and we had over 750 students participate this year. It was one of our biggest relays yet, and it was a total success. And our senior picnic was last Friday, and they had a really fun day. It was a little rainy at the beginning, but it ended up being a nice sunny day for them to have a picnic at Cuesta Park, so that turned out great. And our senior showcase is on Thursday at 6 p.m. at the Performing Arts Center at Cal Poly, and it's free, so I invite anybody who's watching or any of the board members to come. It's great. It showcases all of our seniors and some of their hidden talents. So, also, our senior graduation is on Friday at 4:30. At Holt Field, and everyone is invited to see our class of 2009 graduate. Our grad night starts on Friday, and all the seniors will be picked up on buses for a night of surprises and fun, so I don't really know what it entails, but, I mean, I'm sure you could find out. And then on behalf of the senior class, which I'm actually not in, but I would like to say that I just want to say thank you to all the staff members at the high school and all the people who have helped make their 4 years an enjoyable 4 years and an unforgettable high school experience. So, and on my behalf, I would just like to thank the board for all the support you have given our school throughout this school year, and thanks for the support you've given me as your student representative. I've really enjoyed it, and I know I have grown from it, and it's been great. So, and on a completely different note, the 2009-2010 school year will start on August 27th. So, thank you.
Madam, thank you, Katie. Thank you for sharing your time with us this year. We've really enjoyed having you, and we wish you a wonderful summer. As always, Dr. Eisenjath Rogers.
I just had a question for Katie, but I didn't.
Oh, sure. Go ahead.
Katie, I received an invitation to the graduation, and it says that senior showcase is at 5:30 on Thursday. Do you know which it is, 6 or 5:30?
I was told it was at 6, but if your invitation said 5:30, I would probably go with that. So, because I would say it's better to be 30 minutes early than 30 minutes late. So, yeah.
Good call.
So show up and, you know, hang out if you're early. So, yeah.
And Katie, one last question. Do you want to talk about the senior gift?
I can talk about what I know about it. I don't really know that much about it. But from my understanding, because I'm not actually in the senior class, but from my understanding, they're helping out the Tiger Plaza, which is going to be like a school-wide project that we're kind of undergoing in the next couple of years, and we're kind of going to renovate our school a little bit, make it a little bit different, you know. And I don't exactly know what it's going to look like. There's actually like a layout on our school website if you want to check it out. It's going to be really cool. I don't think it'll be finished by the time that I graduate next year, but for all the incoming classes, I think it'll be finished and it'll make our school look great. And I know that they planted trees last Saturday. They made the trees around the front of where you enter the school. There's a big tree, and then they're going to have like a statue. I think a golden tiger or something like that. So it's going to look really cool. So,
okay, Katie, as always, you are welcome to stay, enjoy the meeting with us, participate, or we're mindful also that you have homework and other things that you're involved in. So anytime you'd like to leave, please feel free.
Well, I think I might go study for finals if that's okay.
Absolutely. But, did you plan to stay to hear the discussion of the agenda item? Okay, then why don't we take your comment at that time? Okay, is there anyone else who would like to address the board? Okay, seeing none, then we'll go forward to agenda item 10. Oh, no, I'm... No, we put those behind. We're going straight to action discussion, and we're taking 10 first. So item 10 is approval of revised board policy 6154, homework/makeup work. Okay. And will people who address the board please be aware that we have a 3-minute time limit, and we may give a little grace on it, but that's what we're shooting for.
Madam President?
Oh, yes, Dr. Matakovich.
May I present the item first?
Yes,
okay,
please.
Very good. I appreciate that. Am I on? I think so. I'm very pleased to bring a revised homework makeup work policy for its first reading for your discussion tonight. This has been a topic of curriculum council for the last several years, and so over the course of this year, it has been a topic that we've researched and discussed. And we have a recommendation before you tonight for your consideration of your policy. The group, even Curriculum Council, even requested an additional meeting so we could be able to bring forth our proposed policy this year, so the policy can be updated for next year and implemented as such. So we're hopeful with this first reading and possibly the second one at the end of the month that we'll be able to move forward. Curriculum Council has read a number of research articles. There were profound differences in opinion in the research and within our district. You have a summary of one major research project, which Dan Andrus, the new principal at Morro Bay, has presented to his staff, and it's included with this item to highlight some key components of the research. We've discussed them, questioned our current practices, engaged all staffs in our recommendations and in its development multiple times, and we're now here to talk about our proposed policy. We've included our administrative regs to show you our implementation practice, but as you know, you will be taking action on the policy only. I'd like to highlight some key elements of the policy and of our discussions. We want homework to be relevant and meaningful to our students. We want it to reinforce learning. We know its success depends upon cooperation between teachers, students, parents, and administrators. We also know that when students miss school, they need to be given the opportunity to complete all assignments and receive credit for satisfactorily completing their work. In our ARs, we emphasize how important daily reading is. We also emphasize that it must be relevant and purposeful with timely feedback. There are guidelines presented in the administrative regs for administrators, students, parents, and teachers. I'd like to draw your attention to the assignment of homework section in our ARs, which is Section D. And it's meant as a guideline. You see that we're suggesting daily reading and all additional homework to be relevant and purposeful, and that it should not exceed 10 minutes per grade level. Some of the research that we read shows that if homework takes more than 10 minutes per grade level, it has a negative correlation to student achievement. So we agreed that the 10 minutes per grade level would be a guideline that we could support as it accumulates over the grade levels. We trust with the revised policy presented and the corresponding ARs that we'll be able to provide quality homework that is purposeful and meaningful to the students with immediate feedback, and that this will promote student achievement. I'm happy to say we have a couple or a few curriculum council members here tonight. Marley Schmidt from Pacheco School, Elizabeth Moran from Del Mar are here to answer any questions that you might have at the elementary level. We have several principals present tonight as well. Mary Lou Gooden sits on curriculum council as well, and they would be happy to share their sites and insights, as well as Rita Delliscamp and Eric Jarvis are part of curriculum council and are here to speak. I've just highlighted some key components of the policy, and I ask that you provide us input, and hopefully we're able to answer your questions to your satisfaction tonight.
Thank you. Mr. Millar.
Dr. Matakovich, on the board policy itself under makeup work, I noticed the use of shall for making up assignments for excused absences, and then the use of the word may for unexcused absences. And I just wondered what the reasons, and there's kind of a follow-up to that on the AR, but the reasons for the difference in language.
Well, in our discussion, actually, the recommended policy from the California School Boards Association gave us two options, to either use shall or may, and we felt that the second should be permissive on the teacher's part in order to ensure that teachers have that opportunity to make that call based on their class practice.
And is at least some of the consideration for that, that the unexcused absences and trying to get the makeup work done by the student imposes an additional burden on the teaching staff or the...
Well, we talked a little bit about that burden, but more importantly that, you know, if the absence isn't an excused absence, and we just felt that it needed to be permissive on part of the teachers in terms of their classroom practice.
In the ARs there at the bottom of 10.7, there's the use again of may when it comes to suspended students. And I guess my concern is that it just feels like an incentive to unexcused and suspended students as far as not requiring the possibility of not requiring completion of the work. Now, I mean, I can understand a differentiation in the grade given because of the, you know, that too, I mean, if a student is unexcused or suspended, needs to complete the work, but the appropriate grade for that work would easily be influenced by their unexcused absence or the fact that they were suspended. I guess I'm just concerned with them getting off the hook doing homework because they're suspended or unexcused.
Well, we don't want them off the hook, but as you'll see, it's basically an Ed Code section that we are reporting here. In our discussions, it was important to us that late homework, that it wouldn't be considered punitive in terms of the grade. What our goal is to support the learning and to ensure that the students are able to complete the objectives of the homework assignment. So that was taken into consideration.
Dr. Eisendrath-Rogers.
Thank you. Dr. Matakovich, I'm wondering if I'm not overlooking this. Did the committee discuss whether or not homework should be graded?
Yes, we had a pretty extensive conversation. Would someone from the group want to talk about that? Marley or Rita, would you? That's great. Yeah.
Just briefly, I remember some of that conversation had to do with making sure we inform students whether assignments, whether they be homework or classwork, were going to be graded and in what way, or whether they wouldn't be part of a grade. So it wasn't so much deciding for everyone how it was going to be, but making sure that that was communicated to students.
The reason I ask is that in Mr. Andrus' research here, he quotes, there seems to be a negative correlation between graded homework and student achievement at most levels. So I assume the idea there is that children should be doing the homework as practice for the actual tests that will take place in school, and that actually grading the homework is a disincentive to...
Well, the research isn't conclusive, but, you know, that was one comment that was made in the research, yeah. So what we want to be sure of is that students have the opportunity to complete their work, that it's meaningful, purposeful, and adds value to their class assignments. Marley, would you like to comment on that as an elementary teacher in terms of what your experiences are?
Thank you. I just want to reiterate that it was found that it's that feedback is the most important thing, so that the practice that is going on, that it be done accurately and correctly so that the practice is worthwhile. But feedback was, I think, the operative word, so that it not become a punitive or negative thing for kids.
Mr. Buckman.
Thank you. As I read this, I couldn't help noticing that the word reading, daily reading, reading comes up about three times in here. I'm kind of interested in, was it the curriculum council's focus on?
That was a large part of our conversation. Mary Lou, yeah, would you mind commenting on that, please?
Mary Lou Gooden, Los Ranchos. I think many of the teachers felt that the reading may be the key critical piece to the homework. And there was some debate, to be honest, about it would be okay if reading was the only homework. So the language that you're seeing for elementary was reading and 10 minutes or reading and 20 minutes. But the reading, don't you agree? The reading was a key piece for elementary school, K-3 particularly, that needs to be in place daily for the students.
And it was the feeling of the curriculum council that lower socioeconomics and families that are that this is something that all families could accomplish.
If they can't accomplish it at home, we do it at school. There's a great deal of effort at every school, every elementary school and district to provide that particular support, homework club support, and a great deal of, I know, administrative time in being sure those students can get the support they need. I know even at Los Ranchos, we have adults that help students with reading recovery homework, for example, if they are unable to do it at home. So we build that into the day. If you don't do the practice, it doesn't help. So I think all of us have supports in place, many of them paid for by state funds. Teachers are able to get reimbursed for that, so that's very helpful. But it is a key piece to progress. The other piece, I think, many of us have, there was, to be really honest, a lot of discussion about specifically K-4, the amount of time, or K-5, the amount of time it takes. But one thing that I think is a little different, the research, I don't think was based on California standards. And I think that's the pressure that many of us are feeling, that in order to get a kindergartner to read by the end of kindergarten, we didn't even really begin that until middle of first grade previously. In order to do that, you have to have a lot of practice. And if we had different standards, I think we wouldn't be feeling the pressure. The sites wouldn't be feeling the pressure as much. But it's very difficult to cover standards that are so complex for young children, particularly the K-3. The standards are very challenging, and so they have to practice. And we don't have enough time in the day unless we were to extend the day. So that was a lot of that.
Mary Lou, before you go, thank you. I've gotten interested in Curriculum Council members' inputs on whether this AR communicates to teachers that they don't have to give homework. And is that more of a site directed?
No, there was a lengthy discussion in Curriculum Council. That was a very large part of the discussion. And I know at my site, I shared it with my staff three times because I said, I need you to really pay attention to the minutes here because we will follow these guidelines. And there were some teachers that were quite uncomfortable. I have some spectacular teachers, and their students perform very well, but they're doing much more than 10 minutes a night in first grade of homework. So, but they read them, and they said, we can be team players. We can agree. And I'm pretty sure all the other sites had the same kind of discussion because it's particularly hard if you're on a track where you're really trying to focus on student success and student academic success in reading, and then to ask us to limit the time, that was what was the most uncomfortable. But my staff made the commitment that it would be reading and 10 minutes in first grade.
And I guess my follow-up question you kind of anticipated is, are the ARs eroding site-based decision-making in an area where maybe that's not the best idea? And feel free to speak freely.
Oh, no, the ARs are always very supportive of school routines. I appreciate the process of the ARs because I actually think they often reflect the practice pretty accurately. And as a site administrator, it's often very helpful to say, these are the guidelines, let's work with them. Even with an AR in place, I can't guarantee you that every classroom will follow it. I can say I can try, and we can have a lot of collaboration about it. But I think it is very helpful to have guidelines, and particularly in this case that are somewhat research-based and that are good for students. It's pretty easy to get off on what I like to do and what I think I did well. I actually am reflecting on my experience when I was a teacher. I easily gave 90 minutes to 2 hours a night of homework for 9 years. And I look back on that, and I think it's way out of proportion to what needed to be done. But that was what we did where I taught. And so I appreciate having some board support and having some ARs that say, these are guidelines that are reasonable for children and for families. At Los Ranchos, I've been there 7 years, and the second year I was there, we did a really intensive reevaluation of our homework policy, and we actually have quite a bit, significantly less homework than we did 7 years ago when I started because of the parents, the conversations we've had with parents. But this is still, it's going to be a big break. It'll be a tough change for first, second, third grade teachers, this amount of contraction. But I don't think it'll be bad. I just think it's going to be a new challenge.
Mr. Spadafore.
Yeah, Mary Lou, I was wondering, is the concern that it's going to change the dynamic in the classroom to where more will have to be covered or reviewed again because of the change?
Yes, I think it's very difficult to master the standards as they are written currently, particularly in the K-4, without extra practice. It shouldn't be novel or new information that you're doing at home, although sometimes those reports and those projects are the best thing the students remember from school. But so many of the standards, and we've talked about reading, but mathematics, third grade, what they have to master now were many of the things I taught in fifth grade to your daughter. So, and I thought I was an okay teacher, but I worked hard to get my fifth graders. And now my third grade teachers are doing some of the same content that I used to teach in fifth. And there are some children that can memorize multiplication tables, all the facts, but it's very difficult to do it within the school day because of the number of standards and the amount of what we're covering. And reading even more so. If you have a low reader, they just have to read a lot. And then there's no other way to get around it. And we do talk a lot about how to provide it within the school day, double dose, extra time after school. Sometimes we catch them 15 minutes before school's over and overlap it so that they can stay there. But, it's a challenge all the way around.
Okay. Mr. Angel.
Let's see if I can do this while knocking it down. Do the guidelines take into account projects that students may be doing, like a Greek or Roman project or whatever they do at individual grade levels?
Yes, and let me look for, let me find that. 10.7.
Right above makeup.
Thank you, Ms. Eisendrath-Rogers. If you look at 10.7, and it speaks to special projects and assignments. Particular those for accelerated classes may vary from these guidelines. That's correct.
And one more question. Did the council take into account that what may take Mark 10 minutes to do may take Phil 25 minutes because he's at a different place in his academic career?
Yeah, we talked about how we have a variety of learners with different abilities and how important it is to look at your students and provide the best possible assignments, and you might vary the assignments depending on the individuals. We asked parents to work with us in that case as well, and that's why if you read the parent guidelines in cooperation with the teacher to be able to realize, a good effect is what we're looking for. So we need that cooperation for that to get that kind of feedback.
Excellent. I thought it was a great the language was very well spelled out, and I just wanted to reiterate that with you.
Thank you. Thank the council.
And I just had a comment regarding, Mark, what you said about low socioeconomic. Was your concern access to books at home?
No. It's not access to books at home. In some of the research from CSBA, it talks about that for lower socioeconomic students, homework's not as effective, and I wanted to make sure that we were making it effective for them. And I think that Mrs. Gould answered that very well.
Okay, thank you.
Marley or Elizabeth, would you want to comment on that, being from Title I schools? Elizabeth?
Marley Schmidt, Pacheco, first grade. I did want to reiterate a couple things, and one was about the reading and books. One, I did want to reiterate what Dr. Matakovich had said, that we did, I really appreciated how she presented so much research to us before we even started this, and a considerable amount of time was spent at every meeting talking about this, and we were encouraged to go back to our schools and really bring back feedback from the teachers. So I appreciated the process. As a teacher,
the reference to reading, I really appreciate that because I think it keeps all of us our eye on the ball about reading has to be the top priority. And as Mary Lou said, you know, with the standards being so intense, it's easy to lose our focus on that. And yet that is the most important thing. And because it's stated at every grade level, I think it keeps us really mindful of that. I also wanted to say that This policy also helps teachers who are getting pressure from parents who want more homework. And we do have that parent population also. And it is, and it's very helpful that it is supported by research. And I think the parents that, those parents that might be pushing for more homework also are very responsive to the fact that it's research-based, that we're keeping it to a minimum. I also appreciated the fact that at the different grade levels it says if additional homework is given, not or it should not ever exceed this amount, and if homework is given, it should never exceed this amount. So I thought the guidelines were very helpful, still giving enough leeway to teachers. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any other board comment? Shall we open this up to public? Ah, yes.
One more comment. I just wanted to address the low socioeconomic students. I'm Elizabeth Morin from Del Mar Elementary, and we're very mindful that students need to have books, and parents, when parents are involved in that reading process, that that's the most beneficial for students. But it's not always possible given working families and language barriers, and it makes it more challenging. Our parent population asked for an English learner homework club, which we instituted this year for first through sixth grade students. We also had the family, and Rita, if I say this wrong, correct me, the family Latino Family Literacy Project, which brought parents and students in to develop reading skills and reading at home skills. So I think we are very mindful of those students and what their needs might be.
Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Eisenrath-Rogers.
One last point of clarification from Dr. Matakovich. The line that you just read, Dr. Matakovich, about accelerated classes, when I first read that, I thought that that might apply to our accelerated learning school TEACH. But it sounds as though that only relates to high school honors and advanced placement classes, where it makes an exception.
Yes, and that our intent was to cover the span across all grade levels. It wasn't intended just for secondary schools, so we might work some language there that would state that.
Could you tell us where you are, Dr. Eisenrath-Rogers?
10.7. Okay. Just above makeup work.
Okay, I'm with you.
Maybe just...
Okay. Well, then let's open this up for public comment.
I have some requests to speak on this item, and when we get through the request, if you would like to speak and you haven't filled out one, don't worry about it. Just raise your hand, and we'll accommodate you. First is Wendy Furtschneider.
That could be something that we talk about.
Mm-hmm. Good evening, members of the board and staff. My name is Wendy Furtschneider, and I have a third grade son at Sinsemer School. And I'm the daughter of two educators. And so when my son was in first grade, my father handed me an article from his Phi Delta Kappa journal, and it was titled Abusing Research, The Study of Homework and Other Examples by Alfie Cohen. After reading the article, I was really dismayed to find out. And we were just starting first grade at that point, that the struggles with homework that I was seeing my son with and other parents were explaining to me were not necessary, because it clearly is concluded in his review of the research that in elementary school, homework doesn't correlate with achievement, and the non-academic benefits of homework have never been studied. And I then last spring, about a year ago, decided to read more of the research. I read Harris Cooper's full report, 61 pages, review of all of the research, and he's the homework guru, and he said homework in elementary school doesn't have academic benefits, and the non-academic benefits have not been studied. So I and a few others went to Dr. Matakovich in September and asked if we could review the homework policy, and she agreed that it would be the Curriculum Council's job to do that. And I met with the Curriculum Council at every one of their meetings starting in October, and I want to say that Dr. Matakovich was very supportive and helpful and inclusive of my participation in the Curriculum Council. And I really thought the process was wonderful and working with everybody on the Curriculum Council. And I want to say that the board policy and the ARs as revised are much improved over the previous version. They're more clear, concise, and consistent. They reflect a strong emphasis on reading and include the generally accepted guidelines of 10 minutes per grade level. Those are not actually backed up by the research. Harris Cooper made those up because he thought after doing all that research, he should say something. And I can give you those references. My concern is that with reading every night and 10 minutes in first grade, 30 and third, you're back up to our previous policy of an hour in third grade. I like what everything that the policy says now, but I think that it needs to be stated more clearly that aside from reading, elementary students don't need to have homework on a daily basis. That's what the research shows. Occasional special projects, things that can't be done in school, things that only can be done at home, those are the things that should be assigned for homework. And I don't think that's clear enough in the board policy or the ARs. I have sent to Mr. Spadafore some additions to the policy, and I have actually one additional line. I have copies of it I can hand out to you. Just to, yes, I have copies for all of you here. And I have one additional item to that. So was that my time?
It was.
Okay. Well, I believe these additions are just small clarifications and strengthen the policy. I support the work of it. I worked on it. And I have further concerns about homework. I think we're moving in the right direction. I appreciate all the work the Curriculum Council has done and Dr. Matakovich, and hope we can keep moving forward.
The next request is from Deneen Hicks. And then Jill Doyle will follow Ms. Hicks.
Good evening. I'm Deneen Hicks, and I have a third and a fifth grader at Pacheco Elementary School. I also have a master's degree in education and about 10 years of elementary teaching background. I'm speaking on behalf of myself and several of my Pacheco colleagues, my parent colleagues. I do appreciate the work that has been done so far with the Curriculum Council, and I appreciate that that it is research-based. When I was teaching, I did not find very much value in homework. And now as a parent, I particularly don't find much value in it for me or for my children. Having spent countless hours working one-on-one with my children, there have been, this year, my son is fortunate to have a teacher who's been willing to, as we were talking about, modify his homework. What takes other children maybe 10 or 15 minutes takes my son 45 minutes one-on-one with me, a credentialed teacher. So I appreciate that there is a discussion about modifying the homework policy or perhaps even eliminating homework altogether at the elementary level. As a teacher, my understanding and what I learned and read about was based on Jim Trelease's research, and he wrote the Read Aloud Handbook. And for him, what he suggested was the number one way to influence children's ability to read, and we understand that reading is critical to all learning, that the number one way to influence children to read is to read aloud to children. And his
feeling was not just reading to little kids who can't read themselves, but once children are starting to read themselves, to read aloud to them at least two grade levels above where they can read to themselves. What that does is that their comprehension and understanding level is a couple of grade levels above their actual reading level. So by reading to them at that level that they can't yet read but can understand, you're expanding their vocabulary, expanding their comprehension, and as they come to those words in their own reading, they're not unfamiliar. So I think that the reading, and especially reading aloud, which isn't addressed here but I think should be, is probably the most important component of homework. And interestingly, today on NPR, I heard about research by Nobel laureate Daniel Kahneman, and he used the term the illusion of validity. And he said, people have a huge amount of confidence in their own judgment, even in the face of evidence that their judgment is wrong. So I'm hoping that we are able to rise above the illusion that homework has any academic benefits at all and take a long, hard look at the evidence that says it has no value.
Thank you.
Jill Doyle, followed by Elisa Piet.
Hi, I'm Jill Doyle. I'm a Sinsheimer parent, and I'm also a school counselor in the Paso Robles schools. I would like to talk to you tonight about the impact of homework on families. When my son knew that I was coming to speak to you all tonight, he said, Mom, please tell them how much I cry and how much you yell at me. I realize I'm outing myself when I say that, but he really would like to... He wanted me to convey that to all of you, that his frustration level with homework is intense. And I've had many conversations with parents at different schools that agree with that statement, that families are taxed these days as it is with their energy and resources, and there's very little time in the evening for bonding, for community outreach, for things that families benefit from. Yeah, that's just all I wanted to say. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Hello. My name's Elisa Piet. I'm a mom of two girls at Sinsheimer, ages, in kindergarten and third grade. I'm a marriage and family therapist in town, and I'm very committed to education in all areas of the girls' lives. And I want to start with a quote from Alfie Cohen's book that I thought was really relevant. One characteristic that often shows up on those lists of long-term goals of education is something like curious or lifelong learners. Psychologists sometimes call it an intrinsic motivation to learn. For many of us, this is our single most important objective for our kids, at least with respect to school. Unhappily, this is often one of the most salient casualties of homework. Most of what homework is doing is driving kids away from learning, says education professor Harvey Daniels. To that extent, even if homework really did provide other important benefits, we'd have to weigh them against this overwhelming disadvantage. One of the most important things about watching my kids grow up has been to see them naturally learn from and explore their surroundings. And as any parents know, their eyes are wide open and excited to learn. And my children have always been excited to experience school and learning in school. And I know school plays an important role in this developmental process. But most homework has not encouraged their desire to learn. In fact, once homework begins, my child, particularly my older child, my kindergartner girl, you know, is fine. But her eyes almost deaden. And I know that, and she's exhausted from the day. She's done a ton of learning that day. She doesn't need to do any more. She's got gymnastics. She's got life. She needs to relax and go play and be with us. Some learning is reinforced, and that is educationally positive. But more often than not, it does not reinforce learning. It does not inspire curiosity and is essentially powerless busy work. that's been one of the most frustrating pieces of all, is the busy work element. I am in support of reading and do read to my children every day. But the impact of homework on my girls is clear. They're exhausted. They're tired. They don't want to. There's no openness to learn any further by the end of the day. There are some who are also here from other schools who are not going to be speaking, but I wanted to also acknowledge them if they would like to stand up. Thank you for being here. There's many, many more parents who we've talked to over the months since the beginning of the year who couldn't be here. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
I have no further requests to speak, but if you wanted to speak, please come forward, Mr. Chambron.
Hello, my name is Bob Chambron, and prefer not to say what school my daughter goes to. She's in the sixth grade. And what I'm about to hear say here tonight are my opinions. You could consider me an expert after this year, an expert on homework abuse. My daughter did about 15, 20 hours 1 week. She did 30 hours of homework a week. Prompted a grievance back in March, which has really not been adequately addressed. I want to preface my statements with that. Basically, our daughter's was stolen from us this year by this excess of homework, and there's almost like a missing year in our life. So, without getting into my own personal problem too deeply here with the administration's treatment of this issue, I would like to say that I would like to lay out some groundwork so that the language here is not kept vague enough to permit this sort of homework abuse that we suffered this year. One is the homework should be defined, this would be in the first part, it should be defined as work done outside of regular school hours initiated by the school. Second, no extra credit or optional homework shall be offered. This is a huge area of possible abuse. No more than two additional hours of homework per week shall be allowed in those special circumstances under 10.7 that were referred to earlier. And I think there should be, just to be very specific, there should be a weekly cap. Somewhere in the language here, we need to have a weekly cap, 6 hours, 8 hours total, or that could even be done on a monthly basis, but something that makes it very, very clear what the cap is. And then also the language, I don't see any language in here, perhaps I missed it, where it'll be clear about how the homework amount is being determined. That's an area of great, great wide open interpretation. Thank you.
Thank you. Does anyone else who did not have an opportunity to fill out a slip, please come forward. Don't be bashful. We don't want you going home feeling like you didn't get a chance to be heard. We prefer you to come forward, and even your parents who were recognized, if you have things you'd like to add, please come forward. Okay. Seeing none, Madam President, I'll turn that back to you.
Okay. Is there any further board discussion? Ms. Stronger.
Yeah, I have a couple of questions. In the proposed board policy under makeup work, there was it said reasonably provided. Dr. Matakovich, how do we determine reasonably? And I'm assuming that would be addressed in the ARs, but I reasonably is one of those terms like free and appropriate public education that people sometimes argue about.
Well, each classroom teacher has their class expectations, and so what we want to be sure of is it's clear to the students, what their opportunity is to be able to have the assignments provided. So it's important that it's reasonable, and if you look to the administrative regulations, you see where the administrator and teacher work together to ensure that.
Okay. And actually, I'd like to address one of Mr. Chambron's comments. Who determines what takes about 10 minutes? How do you get to that place? And that's just a question I'd like to throw out there because I think that's a reasonable question. If we're going to say that we should be limiting homework at X amount of minutes per subject per day, how do we, and that might be a question for the for the principals as well, how do we know what's going to take the average student 10 minutes?
Well, we have the experience of the teacher in terms of working with the assignments, but most importantly, the feedback that they get from their students and from their parents. You know, they estimate the amount of time, and they do a good job with that. But based on the feedback from the students as well as from parents, you know, we've used a technique of asking parents to sign homework so that the teacher, the parent, and the student are all working together to oversee the assignments. If they go in excess of the allotted time, that feedback from the parent and from the student is really important to get so you can make the adjustment. Our intention here is to follow the guidelines, and that our teacher's intent is exactly that, to provide not any more than that amount of time in terms of homework. So I don't know if anybody from the group would like to comment on that, but basically we're looking for the communication piece to take place so we can make adjustments if we're exceeding the time.
So an expectation would be that if a parent came to a teacher and said, this assignment that was expected to take 10 minutes really took my child an hour, not necessarily because we had play breaks in there, but because it just was too difficult to do in 10 minutes, that the assignment would be modified and the child wouldn't be penalized?
I think the child would not be penalized. More importantly, that we get the discussion going between the family and the teacher and the student. And let me see. Checking to, you know, ensure that the homework assignments are completed, you know, if the parent's realizing that they're not completed within the allotted time, that's very important feedback for the classroom teacher to get.
I guess in that when I'm looking at page 10.4, one of the things we talk about is plan assignments within the student's capability, mm-hmm. and I'm assuming that would leave an opportunity to modify the assignments as appropriate for the individual level of the student. So some of the things that I read, it was interesting, was that there actually may be some benefits for students with learning disability to do some homework if it's the right conditions. Mm-hmm. So I'm hopeful that this allows for the modification of assignments.
Yeah, we had a pretty extensive conversation about exactly that. It's very important that we're meeting the needs of the individual mm-hmm. students, and that's why assignments do vary depending on the individual student.
And then the feedback to the student, of course.
Of course.
And then I just wanted to comment that on page 10.5, I really appreciate the parent guidelines. And I like that parents are being made responsible for example, encouraging good study habits and things like that. Mm-hmm. I think working with a student to provide a designated time and place, I understand that could be difficult for some of our students that may be sharing homes, our homeless students and people like that. But especially read to encourage literacy. So I like that we are hopefully encouraging that kind of feedback. I'm hoping that, again, if a parent says, this is not getting done in 10 minutes, mm-hmm. if that's being modified. And then I think the other thing that Mary Lou was talking about is just because we have a policy that says you can do 10 more minutes of homework, that you don't have to do 10 minutes of homework, and that homework is only, well, there's a lot of things that we could talk about homework doing, but I think that's probably enough for me.
Okay, Mr. Buckman.
As I was looking at some of the research as well, one of the things that became clear is that in the United States, there's been almost a pendulum swing, times when homework has been very highly honored, and then times when it's been sort of the pariah of public education. So I want to know whether the Curriculum Council was aware of that, and then do they feel that this policy that they're proposing is somewhere more towards the middle of that pendulum swing?
If I could, you know, even based on the summary that Mr. Andrus provided us, I think we were all aware of exactly what you're saying, that there are pros and cons that have been presented. I know I've shared with some of our other committees the homework tips that are provided by NCLB federal government. And at the first part of that document, it just very objectively states, research states these are the things homework can do that are good for kids. Research states that sometimes homework can do this that might not be good. So I think we're dealing with exactly that, an issue that has its pros and cons. And on that page 10.7, right above that area where we were talking about special projects and assignments, particularly for accelerated classes, might vary from the guidelines. Above that is a statement that has been in our administrative regulations. It says the above guidelines should not be interpreted as a mandate to assign homework in every subject every day. So, you know, having sat in with the group, I feel that we were trying to strike a balance and have wording in this document that would both encourage reading and what the research says about that and provide some guidelines without tipping one way or the other.
Mr. Angel.
I'd like to point out on 10.2, the board believes the success of this policy is dependent upon cooperation between teachers, students, parents, and administrators. And that's exactly what it is. And then bringing reading as homework. You know, when I was growing up, reading wasn't homework. That was just something we did. So it just says what's going on in our culture today that we actually need to say it has to become homework. It's a sad reflection on the culture with the amount of technology and TV and things going on at home. So I applaud you guys having students read. And just again point out that part on 10.2.
Okay, Mr. Spadafore. No, he's behind you.
Thank you very much. I want to thank everyone who was on the Curriculum Council for the work and the research and the parents who came tonight and also were involved in the process. My feeling is the process sometimes is as important as the end result because the discussion is critical to determining all the factors that need to be considered. And as board members, we sit here relying on everyone who's here tonight and others who aren't, who participated, so it's critical for us to make a decision. The one thing that I feel strongly about is the need for flexibility relative to this policy, the ability for teachers to assess each student's progress relative to all the tools that are available in the classroom so adjustments can be made, which I hope this policy allows, and then an evaluation of the results to determine if the student is headed in the right direction. I think the homework policy is important as it is presented, and it's a tool to be used by the teacher in the classroom. But more importantly, I see it as a very important tool and part of a relationship between the teacher, the student, and the parent as you go through the school year and you determine that certain things are working and certain things aren't working. I would never want to handcuff teachers by saying you can never do this. And again, I would never want to say to parents that how dare you bring a point up to a teacher because it's part of the guidelines or it's part of what the district has felt is in your student's best interest. I'm not going to be able to stay much longer because I had a medical procedure on Friday and it makes it difficult to sit. But I just wanted to state before I leave that I believe the work that's been done here, the commitment of everyone on the council and the parents who brought their ideas forward are part of what's allowing the district to create better guidelines than what existed, to create the relationship in the classroom that allows the teacher, the parent, and the student to see how progress is being made, what's working, what isn't working, and I think this policy allows it. And I think there's going to have to be that flexibility on everyone's part to communicate, discuss, and then reach conclusions about what's working, what isn't working, what's best for my student, my child, in that classroom. And again, I want to thank everybody for participating in this process.
Okay. Mr. Millar.
Thank you. I was actually looking at the language suggestions from Wendy Furschneider. And I guess for me, and I apologize to folks who don't have it in front of you, but one of the suggested changes to the second paragraph of the policy was to include language that a homework plan based on best practices suggested by current research. I guess I have two observations. One is I hope pretty much everything that we do when it comes to curriculum delivery is based on best practices supported by relevant research. I mean, sometimes the current research, Mark alluded to the pendulum kind of effect. I just wish I hadn't gone to school in the dark ages. You know, this is much more enlightening. So I feel like we encompass that. I have no concerns with some language that is more explicit about that. And just one observation about the suggested language about paragraph 3, the board also recognizes that children's individual differences require adjustment in length, difficulty, and or content of homework assigned. A sentence suggested by Mrs. Furschneider, homework should not unreasonably infringe on family schedules and students' interests outside of school. I think my concern with that is that's a bilateral relationship. The student schedule outside of school is dependent a lot on a parental or family response or family philosophy about how much activity the child should be in, how much guided or restricted sorts of activities they should engage in after school. So it's a little uncomfortable for me to say, okay, you guys don't be unreasonable when it comes to my family schedule. And I do want to put real quick footnote. You know, we're not just talking about children in families with parents or a parent. We're talking about children with grandparents and aunts and uncles and lots of situations. And for me, I trust that the teachers and the principals to recognize those individual child differences and hopefully respond to it. Having said that, I do think we're doing what I think they call in the press, burying the lead on our AR. I would like to see or suggest that we consider moving that note that the above guidelines should not be interpreted as a mandate to assign homework in every subject every day and put it at the beginning of the policy with the big bold-faced letters on it. Because I think it's a core philosophy, a core view that we want to communicate to our teachers, which is we put the responsibility on you and your principal to figure out what's the best approach for homework for your students. So we should give them the clear understanding that they get to make that decision and it's not a mandate. And I guess just to respond to one of the points made, I'm not willing to accept that there's no value in homework. And part of that comes from too many experiences seeing the creativity of our teachers to figure out really neat ways to connect with their kids. So I would hate to make a blanket statement like that and discourage some of the creative approaches from the fine teachers that we have in the school district.
Mr. Buckman.
I think Walter, Mr. Millar's definitely hit upon a point. I would fully support moving that paragraph up near the top.
there's it's Mr. Cooper, one of the researchers cited already, who said, while many researchers take either a positive or negative stance on homework, Cooper in 2001 said it takes a more balanced approach, stating research on the effects of homework suggests that it's beneficial as long as teachers use their knowledge of developmental levels to guide policies and expectations. And I think that that's what this policy is talking about.
Is there any further board discussion? Okay. So. Mm-hmm. Well, we haven't given direction. I think they understood. It would take an action of the board. Okay. Does the board have interest in giving staff direction to move the note, the above guidelines should not be interpreted as a mandate to assign homework in every subject every day, onto the beginning of board policy or AR? Where do you want it? Or both?
I think that can be easily done. I think it would be helpful in terms of clarifying.
I just would like to find out if there's consensus among the board members that they'd like to see that in there. Mm-hmm. Yes? Okay. So then we'll give direction to do that.
Where?
Dr. Valentine?
Where was the direction to move it?
To
where was...
Oh, we are moving it to... We're placing that in a... primary position, I guess, at the top of the AR and the board policy. Okay. And then did the board... Oh, Dr. Eisenrath-Rogers?
I would be interested in staff's reaction or response to the suggestion that 10.7 include the paragraph on 10.7 about... specialty programs may vary from these guidelines, whether there should be some kind of cap placed on the amount of homework. Even I'm not referring to high school so much as elementary school.
Actually, that's not an area that we discussed in curriculum council, but it certainly could be something that we could hash out in the new year. These guidelines are meant as guidelines, and as somebody stated earlier, they're going to evolve as we work with them. And we did not discuss a cap at any point in our discussion, so happy to take that back as feedback for the new year.
Yeah, I'm thinking that just remembering back to when I did the mission... And what was the other one that I did when I did the volcano erupting? And there, specialty projects for social studies can take considerably more time than is was anticipated being spent in the materials that we have before us. Mm-hmm. So we might want to
discuss it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Does the board want to take? Oh. Mr. Stronger.
Sorry. I would all the specialty projects. I think this referred to grades 9 through 12. I would hope that would be more of that reference. As you mentioned, I have that concern too, because I think about some of the science projects that we did, and they did take longer, but they were really fun and we had a really good time doing them. And
it's
They were student directed. I would ask that. That there be a consideration under plans assignments with student capability, some language talking about modification as appropriate for our students as well.
What page is that on?
That was page 10.4, about two-thirds of the way down.
Certainly we can take these suggestions back in terms of discussing with curriculum council as they are ARs. we're interested to know if you have any proposed changes or areas of concern relative to the board policy.
Other than the change that's already been suggested of moving that statement up to the top.
In the ARs.
And the board policy.
And the board policy. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Then I'm fine with the board policy. Chris? You're good? Yeah. Okay, so if Dr. Matakovich, if you would make that change and then bring it back.
Very good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so we've had a suggestion for another change of agenda. Since Mr. Spadafore has had to excuse himself, would we like to go back to our original agenda and do the ROP now and then move on through? Oh, do we have we have people waiting for certain? Okay.
Okay, number one.
Okay, so let's stay where we were. Where we were when we were in the second or third place that we were. Okay, so we are going to, we've taken 10. Now we're going to.
I'll call on you.
8.
How about 9?
You want to go to 9?
Please.
Okay, item 9, how to close the achievement gap while maintaining support for advanced learners.
Yes, thank you. The board asked for an opportunity to discuss this topic, and we're here tonight to discuss it. Several principals present, as well as teachers who are available to make comments, and we hope to have a good dialogue. Our strategic plan goal, which is student achievement and well-being, clearly makes the commitment to provide for each student in our schools that our staff knows the student, cares about the student, clarifies what's important for that student to know and be able to do, refines our instructional practices, maintains accountability for students' achievement and well-being, and helps the student develop a sense of personal responsibility. Our standards-based curriculum is very rigorous, and many would say our approach to ensure that all students are able to achieve these high standards at each grade level is a very challenging experience for our students as well as staff. It puts our students actually at a very high level of achievement in terms of overall performance. That is why, through our strategic plan, you've concentrated additional resources specifically to support our students in need in the areas of reading, our at-risk programs, our English learner program, special education, counseling, and our specialized curricula. All these resources have been designed to assist in closing the achievement gap. We've established the weekly teacher collaboration time, and staff has been able to focus on issues around their teaching and their students' learning. We have staff here tonight who would like to share with you their practices as they meet to establish for their students what their instructional plan is and to ensure that all students are challenged to achieve, including our advanced learners. Years ago, our superintendent shared with you a number of ways in which our staff addresses the needs of accelerated learners within their individual classroom. Teachers provide stimulating instruction and assignments. They provide differentiated instruction tailored to the specific needs of their students. They have temporary ability groupings and also permanent ability groupings. We also have formalized opportunities available to our students. We have Teach School, We have Pacheco School. We have our honors and advanced placement classes at our in our secondary program. We have concurrent enrollment for our secondary students at Cuesta College and Cal Poly. And we have dynamic teachers in all of our classrooms at who are providing opportunities for our accelerated advanced learners as well as for our remedial students. We'd like to provide you with an account from our elementary staff. Lindley Sansbury is here from Smith School. Janet Gould is here from Del Mar School. Rick Mayfield from Pacheco, who'd like to share some highlights of their practices in their classrooms at their respective schools. Mr. Jones is also here as the secondary representative to answer any questions relative to the listing of accelerated courses that we have available at the secondary level. We'd like to start with Lindley Sansbury, who's been very interested in providing what she does for all students in her classroom. Lindley.
Thank you. Board members, I have been an employee with San Luis Coastal for 12 years now, and prior to that I taught high school and even at the post-secondary level. So meeting the needs of all learners is something that's very important to me. I teach at a Title I school, so I think it's rather interesting that I'm up here talking about advanced learners when that's probably what the opposite of what you think would be at a Title I school. But that's the beauty of C.L. Smith is we have a plethora of different types of learners, and it makes it a very special place to be a student and a teacher. So some of the things that are implemented at our site, first of all, is that we offer students math acceleration starting in third grade. We have a standardized assessment that we give them that we have developed as teachers, and they take that in the fall. Then all the third through sixth grade teachers meet, and we have a determined level of passage on that assessment, and we analyze the students' desire and their overall independent learning styles to determine if that would be a appropriate placement for them. So we offer at C.L. Smith up to seventh grade math to our students. And so like right now in my fifth grade class, I have six students that are taking sixth grade math. And next year they will take seventh grade math. And every year that's a new opportunity. It doesn't mean that if you miss the program in third grade, you're done and you can never, you know, advance in math or anything. So we do that, and it's been very successful. We've had a lot of students that enter junior high at a whole grade level above in math. So our success rate at passing that seventh grade math assessment, which the junior high requires of us, has been great. Almost, I think, every year we have like 95%. I would base it on. Also in reading, we are a school that has a GPR, which is Guided Process Reading Groups. And so we're very tied to making sure that all of our students as readers are taught at their level and that they are then also on their independent level challenged to read, you know, things that are above their or at their comprehension but more stimulating and of their own choosing. So one of the programs that I have in my classroom that has also been offered in other classrooms at our school is a program called Book Club. And it's Monday through Friday. I meet with a group of eight students, depending on the number of my classroom. And it's run just like an adult book club. Everybody's reading something at their own level. They present a project or a letter. We sit and discuss the books, and so students are learning how to ask higher order thinking questions or, you know, learn about character analysis or the literature plot line. This is fifth grade, and they will know these terms, and they can talk about that. And I'm not saying just my high learners can do that. Everybody in my classroom can use those terms. But for a high learner, they can just speed through the year reading whatever they want to as fast as they want to. And I've had students that have read 100 books in a year. Whereas before I implemented this independent reading program, I was the kind of book club or teacher that said book report due on biography in October, you know, like that. And this whole program really changed that. And so, you know, I have people that are tomorrow asking me, can you have a graduation, Mrs. Sainsbury, because I want to read two more books before the end of school. And I'm like, okay, I'm not asking you to do that. You know, this is not required. And they're, you know, that's just what they want to do. Good readers are addicted to reading. And so they, you know, in this program can just accelerate and fly. I've had third graders that have even come to my book club from fifth grade. So they're third graders that will come just for 1 hour a week.
and they will, you know, be readers that are, you know, way above their grade level, and they will just do the book club program. And so after every 10 books, the students receive a degree, and that's the motivation. They really like to go through this cap and gown ceremony, and, you know, I try to get some interesting commencement speakers. So, board members, I might be calling on you now. Okay, and other things that we do. Writing, we do a lot of differentiating in writing based on the genre that we teach at each grade level. There is ways that we implement genre that are either structured or highly unstructured, depending on the level of the learner. So that's an opportunity as well for students to be differentiated. And then It may seem kind of interesting for me to note this, but AVID has been, at our elementary school, has been a really successful differentiation program, because that program, while it is geared towards school students that are having problems with, you know, organization, time management, and that kind of thing in school, in my after-school AVID program, which, you know, I run a homework club after school 4 days a week, you know, just stopped it 2 weeks ago, I have students that are all different levels attending that it's just a safe place to do homework, and that's a great thing for all learners, because if you have an advanced learner with an EL learner, you know, they kind of forget that they have a label, that they know by fifth grade they have a label, and so it just makes it a real homogeneous way of teaching. Plus, the AVID curriculum is also structured for all students to become better. No matter where you're at, it can implement strategies and to help you do that. So we work really hard at Smith to, we meet three times a year to look at our class list and have assessments that we're always, you know, kind of tracking, how's the student doing, whatever kind of learner you are. So the advanced learner is benefiting from that as much as the EL or, you know, the average student. So we work really hard. We also offer success strategy programs for 40 minutes a day right before lunch, and that is tailored to students at their level. So there's like a sort of success program, a Read Naturally program, or an accelerated program at that time. So we work really hard, and I think that for our school, I can just tell you that is the thrill of teaching, is to look at a class and know that there's a bunch of different kind of learners out there and figure out the way to meet their needs. And so, yeah, it's a challenge, but it's one that makes teaching very exciting. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Jim?
Did you have a question, Dr. Eisendrath Rogers? Yes.
Good evening. Janet Gould, Del Mar. And Del Mar is similar to C.L. Smith in the makeup of our students, and are doing a lot of similar things for both our students in need of intervention and students in need of acceleration. A guided process reading was mentioned, and that's something that starts in the kindergarten, where students are placed at their instructional level. So it's a great opportunity for intervention for kids who are not yet at level, but it's also an excellent opportunity to push students forward. And we have students in kindergarten who are reading like at level 24, which is the end of second grade. And through that guided process reading structure, students can be pushed into the levels that they're at, and that goes all the way through up into the sixth grade. We also have a structure called Walk to Learn, where we're putting all of our interventions together in one time period. So if students need English language development, if they need the fluency lab, if they need Sort of Success, which is more of a reading comprehension, that they can get it at a set time. But that set time also allows for students that are good writers but want to be pushed a little further, we can have a writing class. We had a class on reading nonfiction science books and doing projects with that. So setting up a structure that allows for intervention but also allows for acceleration. Teachers also differentiate within their lessons. For instance, in math, you have homework that is reteaching. You have the traditional homework, and then you have an enrichment, and often you'll go into classrooms and you'll see teachers that do have a variety of assignments available when it gets time for independent practice for students to differentiate in their learning. Our school site council has put a big focus the last couple years on offering additional enrichment opportunities outside of the school day.
We've had a poetry class. We've had cartooning classes. We started violin lessons through the symphony. We had a Cal Poly professor come and do a technology Alice.org class for our students. We're actually working with our to put together a committee of parents to continue to expand that opportunity for our students, and we've been in touch with different organizations. The Teach Foundation provided some money to give scholarships for families that couldn't afford to do these after-school enrichments. Our PTA has donated money, so they're very low cost, $3 an hour type, very low cost, but still even for families that are unable to afford that, we make it accessible for all students. We also have things, opportunities within the school year, such as the Geography Bee, Battle of the Books. We did participated in a World Math Day, so lots of different opportunities for students to get involved in things, enrichment opportunities within the day. We also have band that we offer our students. We have a variety show that students can choose to participate in. This year we started a couple after-school clubs at our school. We have a drama club for students who are interested in participating. We also started a Del Mar Dashers running club a couple days a week, and those are taught by teachers with a passion to, you know, give more and do more, and they're teaching it on their time after school. We're also looking forward to starting a gardening club next year with a new garden that we just put in at Del Mar. So we also feel like we recognize the importance of meeting the needs of all of our learners at Del Mar.
Thank you, Jen. Okay.
Good evening. Rick Mayfield from Pacheco School. One of the great things about our principals' meetings is that we've kind of developed a professional learning community this year as well. And we get to sit around and share best practices. So much of what I'm going to say has already been said. But, of course, two-way immersion lends itself to advanced and accelerated learners. Not only does it provide a research-based program for our English learner students, but it provides an opportunity to learn a second language for our English-speaking students. We have differentiated instruction, of course, with such a wide spectrum of reading and writing abilities. It's an instructional technique that we've had going at Pacheco School for many years. We have students, the largest number of students who won in the writing contest the last 2 years were from Pacheco School. And it just shows some of the differentiation that has gone on, not only in reading, but in writing as well. We do cooperative learning strategies, of course. We also, in addition to offering English language development, we have Spanish language development classes for our English speakers so that whatever level of Spanish language acquisition that they are at, their needs will be met as well. We offer Spanish summer school, which has really grown over the last few years. It's not intended to replace anything offered by the regular summer school program, but rather to offer an opportunity for kids to learn Spanish in summer and keep those skills sharp. We also offer a lot of cultural enrichment. We believe in a balanced approach to education, as many schools do. And we have things like Dia de los Muertos and Dia del Niño, which are celebrations specific to Pacheco School, which are wonderful for our students. The Children's Creative Project is in every school, but they do some end-of-the-year activities in our school, which are just fantastic. And I brought a little snippet that I'd like to share with you, if we can take a minute to do that. Just to give you an idea of when you take something like an activity like that, it incorporates all different learners, and you do it in two languages, the power of that for students who are struggling as well as advanced students is tremendous. So.
Oh, you're kidding.
This is the volume.
It's a bullet.
No. Shoot. Where's the... Eric. Eric.
While you're waiting, that's my dog. Perfect.
Yeah, Senorita Hicks is playing the part of the teacher.
Okay, sure.
It's not going to work, guys.
Yes.
This is a board. I apologize.
Trust me, you do not want to hear me sing that song.
Yeah, it was supposed to be checked out today.
Especially after you listen to the kids sing it.
Yeah. Well, could you improvise, Mr.
Sure.
Well,
you know, maybe we'll get it going, maybe we won't. But we just finished, every grade level from second to sixth grade does these plays. They're absolutely fantastic. All children are up there. They're bilingual. We purchase the plays. They're made for elementary schools. And then we translate a lot of the material to make sure that we have parts in both different languages. Next year, if you have the opportunity, I'll send you the schedule of plays that are occurring. If you can take the time to come down and watch this, you'll be amazed to see the kind of learning and how it's all brought together in these types of enrichment activities. And it's a shame that we're not going to get a chance to hear it, because the kids and all the adults working on it did a fantastic job to make it happen. But this was a particular song about photosynthesis done in two languages. And this second grade class, all of them just belted out, and they do a great job. So anyway, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay.
We're working on technology in our
Rick, didn't the kids sing that song at the Solar Days? Yeah, it was a terrific song.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay. Do we have anyone else, Dr. Matakovich?
We have other people in the audience that are available for questions, but we turn it back to you for your input.
Dr. Eisenrath-Rogers.
Thank you. I would just like to say I'm so grateful to Mrs. Sansbury and Mrs. Gould for helping us recognize that the needs of accelerated learners is not an elitist concern, that it transcends socioeconomic boundaries, and that, in fact, our obligation to identify those children who have the opportunity to be rising stars is even more important in our Title I schools and in other socioeconomic groups. So I really appreciate your speaking out about that, and I really appreciate the work that you're doing to identify those children. Research shows that those children are at higher risk of actually dropping out of school later, or becoming using drugs for entertainment, because their needs are not being met. And this is something that we need to recognize as we look at our children and try to identify early on that they are accelerated learners. They need those additional challenges, and I really applaud all of you for the work that you're doing with that. Thank you.
Oh, Mr. Millar.
I just wanted to acknowledge Lynn's contribution. When my oldest son was at C.L. Smith, I think it was third grade, he was one of those advanced math learners. He managed to slow down in every other category, but in math. And we literally had a mom, I can't remember her name, who was a former math teacher. And we did an after-school program, and my contribution was I was the master at arms. So I would kind of keep everybody in their seats. And it was a struggle to not only provide the instruction, but also to have the materials mm-hmm. that would challenge the accelerated learners in math. So this is such a great program. I know I've been aware of it at Smith, that it's been going on for quite a few years. It's just exciting to see that a lot of the philosophical changes that have taken place and the emphasis on differentiated learning has really changed the organization fundamentally, and I think it serves kids very well. And I appreciate your efforts.
That's nice.
Hi. I'm very impressed with the number of programs that we're hearing about this evening. In the 2005 comments that Dr. Valentine made and the four suggestions. I've heard that many of those have been implemented. My question is, we often get charts about successes of EL students and reports on those successes, and I'm wondering if in the future, or whether we have them now, the evaluation of these four suggestions for accelerated readers, if we could somehow learn how this is working for them.
Dr. Matakovich is looking like she needs a little clarification.
Yeah, help me with what you're asking for.
Annually we get a report on the closing the achievement gap. We recently got some material with our Friday packets on EL learners and closing the achievement gap. And a piece that's missing for me, especially since this has been on the advanced agenda item, is where do we see the effects of these if they've been implemented? What's the evaluation? Because we have really clear evaluation on EL. And I haven't seen this yet, and I'm hoping it's there.
So you're saying you'd like feedback in terms of the performance of our accelerated learners and how they're doing on our standardized tests that we give? If that would be the board's wish, we'd be happy to provide it.
That's fine. If that's your wish, I have no problem with it. So, Dr. Matakovich, if you would, Mr. Angel,
it would be at our.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to thank all the principals for presenting this evening. We know the state has brought to the forefront our need to close the achievement gap, and we appreciate that. And I also, but I'd like to thank Catherine for bringing. To light the needs of our accelerated learners. As I've gone to the many different open houses here, I have seen teachers do just that, you know, bring out special projects. You can walk in any of the classrooms and see different journals and look at different students' writings, and you can see that our teachers are very well-trained in differentiating their curriculum. And it's common across the district. I've visited schools on the coast and in town, and I just see what a great job the teachers are doing.
Mr. Buckman.
I try to talk to a couple of teachers about this topic, and the one thing that I consistently heard, and because I were one of them, was that we have a lot of programs for accelerated learners, and we have a lot of programs for late bloomers. But for those of us that are in the middle, that we're in the middle, there doesn't seem to be a lot. So as we're talking about all this, the teachers asked me to relay that let's not forget about the kids in the middle either.
AVID, A-V-I-D, that is specifically geared for our middle-level children. Sorry to interrupt.
We need to make it more universal.
Sure. Mr. Millar.
I do think there's a whole bunch of programs that serve all learners, and they don't get divvied up.
Thank you.
Okay, and then my comment would be that I'm really ecstatic to see that we have all of these things going on for our high achievers. I had a high achieving child. I mean, I still have that child. when he was in school in San Luis Coastal, he was a GATE student, and the GATE program really provides very little. It is so underfunded that it's not even worth talking about. And the few things that were available to him were after school programs. And he felt that that was sort of being penalized. You know, why do I have to stay after school? No, I've already been at school. So there are, but these kinds of things were not available. And it wasn't that long ago. It was, you know, 10 or 12 years ago. So, you know, I'm thrilled that all of these things are there for kids who want to stretch and grow and investigate things that are different, you know, that want to be challenged. I thank everyone for coming tonight and letting us know. Well, as soon as I'm done talking.
Well, I know.
Okay, I thank you all for coming and sharing with us what you're doing at your school sites to benefit accelerated learners and all of our learners. And then after Mr. Unger, Mr. Millar has reminded me that I need to call for public comment on this.
And I just want to say I think we owe a debt of gratitude to a retired principal who really started to implement a lot of these things at least two of our elementary schools, and that's Don Schallenberger.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Dr. Eisenjath Rogers.
I see we have a principal who we haven't heard from, and sorry, Dan, but I think we probably should hear about what is unique about Teach School and how it is different and how it benefits the group of students that attend that school for that particular program. Thanks.
Good evening. Dan Block from Bishop's Peak and Teach. So I'll give you a few highlights of both of them. Recently, our sixth grade classes put on a play. I think Phil was there recently on the Bishop's Peak play, but we had The Jungle Book put on by Teach, and we had The Pied Piper by Bishop's Peak, and both were outstanding ways where kids could develop, put some time into their lines, and both showed great colors. So some of the things that have happened uniquely to Teach this year is a partnership with Cal Poly, the Learn by Doing labs that are there. Our students from both schools, or all schools, are welcome there. But from our campus, we've actually walked over there. They've been really successful. The students are engaged in multimedia projects. Again, Teach, that's been an hour a week in those classrooms, an hour and a half a week. And in addition to the classrooms' dedication to continuing those, there's been some public service announcements that have gone out. There's been a CD put out on the historical buildings of San Luis Obispo. And on the Bishop's Peak side, there's been multimedia projects by the kids. We had an architecture firm that came over and worked with 12 of our sixth grade students on designing a green classroom, and it's a $50,000 contest. And the firm does the work, but the students were used as the classroom experts of how they could make a green classroom. So those are some of the things. Of course, I heard math, I heard writing, I've heard reading, and again, targeting the instruction at those upper-level students, and the results for those classrooms speak for themselves.
Questions? Thank you. Oh, thank you. Catherine?
I see that you're ready to move along, but
going to call for public comment, but go ahead.
I just wanted to, since I've had two children at Teach and have attended the open house there, I do feel like I need to comment on the importance of the cohort group of the particular students who choose to attend Teach School. And what you'll hear over and over from those parents and those children is that having those children congregate in one school allows them the opportunity to not feel different. You know, and I think we all can appreciate how children need to feel a part of a group that they can identify with. And for those children, it seems to be particularly important to be able to find a cohort group that they can feel comfortable with, where it's okay to accelerate, to be a kid who's curious and asks lots of questions, and that's okay and that's the norm. And Teach is somewhat different from the other programs that we're hearing about in that way, in that it congregates a group of kids together that make it okay to be smart, to pursue interests, to excel.
Okay, I appreciate that. I chose not to send my son to Teach because I don't believe in taking the best and the brightest out of the neighborhood schools. I think that having bright, high-achieving kids in regular classrooms can serve to motivate other students as well. So,
thank you. I would add to that that many of those attributes that Dr. Eisendrath Rogers enunciated for or enumerated for teach are exist in every one of our school sites to some degree or another.
Is there public comment? Does anyone wish to share in this discourse with the board? Okay, seeing no one, then we'll move on.
Excuse me. I'm sorry. I didn't think this item was limited to elementary school. I didn't intend for it to be limited to elementary school. We are going to talk about middle school and high school as well.
I didn't write the item. Dr. Matakovich?
As we stated earlier, you know, we have advanced placement courses as well as honors, and as well as the possibility of students attending Cuesta College or Cal Poly for accelerated classes. And Mr. Jones is here tonight representing the secondary program. And so if you would like more information, we provided you a listing of the courses that are identified as such. You'll find that on Attachment A of the board item. So,
where's Attachment A? Yes.
Well, last year we had a parent here who spoke about, I want to use the word embedding, but it was basically combining two levels of math, AP and honors, I think. Is that the correct terminology?
Not the AP and the honors, the college prep and the honors in geometry and algebra 2.
I failed already.
We'll give you another chance.
Okay,
that's
thanks.
The way education works.
I just wondered whether you had any results from that. Did it water down one way or did it bring kids up the other way?
We've made adjustments in that program as we've gone along through the year based on student and parent feedback and also the collaboration among teachers during our collaboration times on Mondays. So we've tried adjusted strategies that give in some of the classes in both the geometry and the algebra too. As we went along, we saw the need for the honor students in those classes to get to spend a little bit more time grouped with their instructor to get some additional instruction or help with the more difficult problems that they were being assigned. So we've made those kinds of adjustments as the year's gone along. We have done surveys with the students at the end of each trimester to get feedback from them on how they felt about the program, and by and large, those results have been positive. And as far as our kind of formative assessments in the classrooms, that is the quizzes and tests that we give throughout the year, we've been encouraged by the results that we've seen. And, of course, we'll be looking to see what kind of results we get from our the CST, the California Standards Test, in those classes as well. So with some wrinkles and some challenges, I think that it's been a successful first year for that program.
Mr. Jones, are you expecting a larger population for your AP classes this year?
Well, we have a new initiative that's developing in our school, and I don't know if this is directly responding to your question, but we've been kind of checking the demographics of our honors and our AP classes and comparing that to the overall demographics of the school and then looking at the demographics of our college prep classes. And we're finding, not surprisingly, that the demographics in our honors and AP classes are tilted towards our majority population of students, so that we have underrepresented students in those, not enough, I think, of equal representation of our subpopulations, if you will, in those classes. And so one of our school goals is to actively begin recruiting and encouraging more students who typically don't take those classes to participate. So I know at least in one class, the enrollment in one of the AP classes has gone up as a result of that active effort to recruit more students to participate. So I would see that as being, since it's going to be written into our school plan and it's something that's really beginning to gather interest at the school, I'd see that kind of change happening throughout next year and beyond. And we also then also have our AVID program beginning next year as well with a group of 10th grade students and also a group of 9th grade students.
May I follow up with a question that Mr. Buckman asked earlier regarding proficient students, the students in the middle of the pack? We presently require English language learners, for example, to take 3 trimesters of English as they're coming up. And we offer to our accelerated students the AP option of taking 3 AP classes so they have a whole year of English. What we don't offer is the option for a middle-of-the-pack kid who's learning English and then trying to improve their English to have 3 trimesters of English. Are there any thoughts being given to offering a 3rd trimester of English so that kids have year-round English so they can improve those skills, maybe accelerate a little faster there?
We did a few years ago in our 10th grade English class. We thought it was kind of a critical year for the students to be able to develop the skills that to transition them onto the 11th and 12th grade. Currently, we don't have any plans for adding a 3rd trimester, let's say, at 10th grade or 11th grade, 9th, 10th, or 11th grade English. The AP classes in 11th and 12th grade, in 11th grade, has the seminar, which allows for students to take 3 trimesters, but not at the 12th grade level. So currently, no. And part of that is simply has to do with scheduling, with the pressure on students to meet all of their A through G requirements in order to qualify for UC and CSU. When we add additional trimesters of any class, it begins to impinge on that flexibility that they have for their scheduling so they can cover all of those classes. We also note that across the board in our English program, that students do particularly well on the standardized tests like the SATs, the CSTs, not that there isn't room for improvement, also on the AP tests. So the evidence that we have, the data that we have, indicates that we're pretty successful in that area. So at this point, we don't have any plans for adding at our school a 3rd trimester in English.
Mr. Angel.
With your AVID students, you will push for some of those students to get into the AP classes as well?
Correct. Okay. Yeah. That, in fact, that'll be a big push in what we're doing, both the honors and the AP classes.
Excellent. Dr. Eisendrath Rogers.
I was just going to say I think we do a great job with the AP classes, both at Morro Bay High School, and you can see the extensive list that we offer at both high schools. And they're very challenging classes, and you're really servicing, I think, our students well in that regard. Thank you.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I think it's also important to point out that we have in all of our departments and all of our classes, there are sequence classes that allow for students to advance beyond basic levels. So if a student's interested in programming, for instance, they can go through programming 3 and then go on to more advanced classes in computer science at our school and at Morro Bay as well. So if they're interested in a foreign language, they can go in Latin, they can go through Latin 3 and then on to AP, or in Spanish through Latin 4 and then on to AP. But not just in those classes. In all of the classes, they're sequenced so that they can go on to higher levels and more challenging classes. So I think that really benefits what we might think is beyond what's required, let's say, for their A through G requirements. And then those kinds of classes are supplemented by elective classes that we have in, let's say, in science, where students can take micro and marine biology or anatomy and physiology, or a new class we offer, which is environmental science. Those kinds of classes are also supplemented by clubs we have, like the environmental club or the tech club, where students compete in robotic competitions, our Skills USA team. So there's an opportunity across the board for students to advance, not just in the core academic subjects, but really in just virtually everything that we offer. We have a welding program where students take ROP welding, and then as we see, they're going off to national competitions because they've won state championships. So I'm kind of proud of the fact that at our schools we offer that kind of acceleration, not just in the academic programs, but in all of the programs that we offer. Okay. Thank you.
Was there anything else? Dr. Eisendrath-Rogers, you're still down.
Thank you. I am.
Okay.
This was actually regarding middle school, and I was just wondering, Dr. Matakovich, if we have anyone talking to us about the middle schools.
I'm happy to talk to you about the middle school. And as you can see, we have accelerated English at the 7th and 8th grade level. We also have algebra and geometry available to 7th algebra available to 7th graders and geometry available to 8th graders. There are no identified honors courses or accelerated courses in any of the other subject areas. However, we have a process by which teachers identify needs of students and develop courses. And in the area of science and social science, those have not come forward at this time. That doesn't preclude them from initiating that, but we generate our courses based on student need and based on teacher interest, and at this time, this is what we have.
Sorry, I did have a chance to talk with Dr. Matakovich about this today, and my concern is actually with the middle school programs, and so I'd like to see if I can articulate that and also just say that I did contact a science teacher to ask the question about, is there an interest in bringing forward an advanced or accelerated science program? And what I learned is that it's kind of a mixed bag, and so there are mixed feelings on this, but I do want to put this out here for discussion because this is why I think we're addressing this topic. It sounds like we do an excellent job in many cases at the elementary school level through the RTIs and identifying students who are both accelerated and who are at risk of being below proficiency and individualizing their education. It sounds like at the high school level, we offer very accelerated classes and opportunities for advanced learners. At the middle school level, we do offer the advanced English and advanced math when it's appropriate. But from what I understand, what's happening in all the classes in the middle schools is that because we're mainstreaming, many of us were at the eighth grade graduation of the EL learners yesterday at the at Laguna Middle School, and we heard some of these young people talking about how they just one young man just arrived in this country in January and in fairly short order wanted to be mainstreamed into regular classes, and it's totally understandable that he'd be looking forward to the opportunity to do that. But the challenge that presents apparently for our middle school teachers is that they have then this incredibly broad spectrum of kids whose needs they need to meet by individualizing their educations. They have these accelerated learners that we've just learned about coming up from sixth grade and wanting to go gung-ho in their science program or social studies program. And then we have children who are just learning to speak the language in the same program. And it makes it extremely challenging for them and somewhat boring for the kids who are wanting to advance. They try to utilize mentorships for those children, and that doesn't always keep them engaged either. The proposal that came forward as one thought that I would hope that we could have the opportunity to explore at some other time would be to consider doing what they're doing in Paso, for example, which is that you wait until the students are not at the first level, not at the second level of being an
education code that allows that. And so although as professionals we might recommend that students remain in a structured English immersion type of program up to about level 3 where they have a good basic command of English, we can't keep them. In fact, we have to honor a request to move into English language mainstream. Regarding what used to be referred to in education code as a sequential or simultaneous type of program, what you mentioned was more of a sequential approach to an English learners program where you build the English instruction and then provide access to some of the other core classes as they know more English. whereas the simultaneous approach is to do both at the same time. Our district has not gone to the sequential approach in the past because it requires very careful planning. We need to make sure that we don't lose any students, that we, it's very important for us, and it's a legal requirement and a moral obligation that we provide access to the full curriculum. And so if we wait and that student goes off to another district, or we wait and for whatever reason that student isn't able to access those classes later, middle school is only 2 years. We can't wait too long within the middle school. So I would just, I'm just saying, I think we would need to approach that issue very carefully.
I would appreciate that. And that's actually why the wording of this agenda item asks us to look at how do we close the achievement gap and support accelerated learners. And that is the, that's actually the dilemma that we have. And I would ask that we give this piece of it further consideration. And I'd like to bring that back when we get to the advanced agenda items.
Okay. Is there any additional comment from the board on this item? Okay, then we'll move on. And with our thanks to staff for coming and staying so late. If only I knew where we were moving on to. How about 8?
Madam Chair, could I have a point of clarification? If staff could receive some direction of whether we're bringing something back, and if so, what?
I think that Dr. Eisendrath Rogers was going to bring it up on advanced agenda.
Okay.
Item 8, Mr. Miller. Oh!
That's okay.
Ms. Light.
I get it first. And what I wanted to present as a prelude to this was something that we need to establish concerning our budget. The budget item reflects the first hearing and the first rendition for you as a board of the 2009-2010 budget that Fiscal Services has put together and is proposing to you. I think what you need to understand about what's being proposed is it is about as broad, general, and nonspecific as a budget you're ever going to see. And the issue is that the information that we have available to us about what we're going to be receiving and how we're going to be required to spend it is severely lacking this year. In most years, we have a pretty good sense of what's going to come at us, even though it hasn't been established yet. In this particular year, we don't know what's coming at us, and we haven't got a good sense of how we're going to be able to manage our resources as they are made available to us, or on the converse, even how we're going to have to give up some of our resources. And so as you hear the presentation, just keep in mind this budget's very general. I will almost guarantee you that between the time you adopt your budget and before we start school, there will be a new rendition of the budget that you're going to have to approve the budget transfers and the budget adjustments on, because the state's going to pass on to us certain items that we're not aware of at this time. So in a broad general sense, what you're getting is the best we can do at the moment in time. What you will get is more specific information when the state gives it to us. With the state in mind, I wanted to alert the board that the state is looking at basic aid school districts, that there has been definitive comments made, in particular by the leading staff member of the majority leader of the legislature, that basic aids will be a part of the budget solution at the state level. What they've been given is funding from the federal government. It's federal stimulus money. In particular, it's money designated by the feds to alleviate some of the cuts that revenue limit districts are going through. And percentage-wise, I'm not sure exactly how much It's going to alleviate the pain of revenue limits to search, but it's a significant amount of money when you measure it. And we as a basic aid district are not receiving any of that. So when they calculate what our fair share of pain is, yes, there is an element that would be comparable to a revenue limit, but we also need to receive credit for not receiving the federal stimulus money that revenue limits are getting. And that is a position that the Schools for Sound Finance has taken and has done a very fine job of educating some of the key legislators about. An additional point is that ultimately, being a basic aid district, we don't receive a whole lot of state money. In the whole scheme of things, our state money is limited to restricted funding categorical-wise. Depending on what you class as restricted money in a categorical sense, an example would be class size reduction money. I don't class that as categorical money. It does come from the state, but it requires us to initiate a program that if we go out of bounds, we have penalties attached to it. It's not necessarily a restricted program. Matter of fact, on our on your budget, it's classified as an unrestricted program. However, SIP, EIA, instructional materials, there are significant dollars that are restricted, and those would amount to about $3 million of our budget. So when it comes time for the language to come through about fair share, the question will be, how much state money do we get, and do we have to give up more than what we receive? Because if we give up more state money than we receive, we're actually dipping into our locally generated tax money. And the state has no access to that money, and education in particular doesn't get to keep that money. So we have a real issue with the language when it happens. If the fair share of pain exceeds our state money, what are we going to be asked to do with it? So I just want to alert you that this is now a hot topic, especially for us, maybe not in the whole scheme of things, but if we're going to be made part of the solution, our hot topic is the language that it is constructed and how it acts to take money from us. And so we're going to be watching that very carefully. As we have presented the budget today, none of that is in the budget, okay, it's because we don't know. So the budget you're seeing today does not have any elements of a fair share of pain or a cut to categoricals beyond the 5% that we know we're going to get cut in 09-10, and that's about it. And I'll let Julie fill you in on the assumptions, and then together we'll be able to answer some of your basic questions.
Good evening. I was thinking during Karen Lopez's presentation tonight how I could incorporate some Shakespeare into my presentation, and all I could think of was to budget or not to budget, and that truly is the question. It has been a very unusual year for budget development, and I can tell you without a doubt that without Sandy Carrico, Judy Jones, and Sharon Bloom, you would not have this wonderful binder tonight. They did a fabulous job and put a lot of hard work into it. I think Russell actually went over a lot of the budget assumptions for you at the last budget meeting. Even since we've printed this, there have been some changes. For instance, we budgeted 10 retirees, and based on the number I saw here tonight, I think it was a lot more than that. Another change that will occur is we have been informed that the PERS rate is going to go up a little bit, so that's going to be 9.709%, which is going to be in about an additional $33,000 to the budget. And we will let you know other changes as they occur. If I could bring your attention to the fourth bullet down under revenue assumptions. These are the flexible programs that are moving from restricted to unrestricted. There's 15 of them in our district, and they're all listed here with the amounts that we have budgeted in 2009-2010. The total comes to a little over $4 million. So that amount is going to just move from the restricted column to the unrestricted column. If you look at the other funds, I wanted to bring up a couple of things there, too, that have changed. For instance, the Adult Education Fund is also a Tier 3 flexible program. That money is going to be Unreg A money in two different funds. Fund 53 was Measure A savings, and we also had Measure A money in Fund 21. And we've decided to consolidate those, so we did a transfer from Fund 53 into Fund 21, increasing the fund balance into Fund 21 to $648,000. And we'll continue spending that money on capital facility projects, such as the C.L. Smith Preschool Project and the welding shop at the high school, and others as they become known. If you want to turn to your budget summary page, it has a tab. When I looked at that, this comparison between the estimated actuals and projected budget, there are a couple of things that stood out, and I thought if I didn't know what this was, I'd wonder why. And one of them is the state revenues, which appear to have gone up, which kind of contradicts everything that we've heard about state revenues lately. And that is because of the adult ed fund revenue that's now coming into the general fund. So that's an additional about $1,500,000 that's in the state revenues of the general fund now. As you may know, local revenues are, many of them, like donations and facility fees, are budgeted as we receive them. So that will increase throughout the year. Expenditures on the salaries, we've budgeted a step and column increase. No other salary increases have been budgeted at this time. And if you look down at the restricted programs, you'll see that we usually have a much higher restricted ending balance, but because so many of those programs now are unrestricted, if you look down at Lowdery and other and look at the line called balances swept to general fund, you'll see that that amount is the restricted programs that will now be unrestricted. And that amount, much of that amount, will be budgeted up in the expenditure categories as sites receive their funding for next year. And if you go further in your binder, you can see some very nice graphs that Sharon did that show the historical data for the district, the revenue limit sources based on...
Before you leave, I'm sorry, you leave that section, I'm sorry I wasn't quicker here.
No, that's okay.
So I understand what you're saying about the restricted balances swept in the general fund, but the programs are still listed under restricted but with no dollar amounts. So will they stay in a restricted category?
No.
Depending on, depending on what changes have been made, they can move into unrestricted and just be or another expenditure classification.
What we've done is we've set up unrestricted resource codes for each one of these programs, which you can find if you look under the categorical tab. It'll show you the different resource code changes. So, for instance, the Arts and Music Block Grant was $6,760, and in 2009-10, it's going to be $0,676. So all the unrestricted programs now will have a zero in front of them.
And what we've done is we developed a strategy so that we don't confuse anybody. And we think that's pretty smart. But what we're trying to do is we're going to try and do business as normally as we can and continue to identify past restricted programs, even though they're unrestricted, we're going to identify them as separately as we possibly can. We're going to have some problems with that because the way the state's going to force us to move is to identify this money in an unrestricted way. But we feel that this is a temporary situation in terms of 3 to 5 years, and then they're going to revert back. And what we don't want to do is lose the identity, especially the dollars that belonged in these individual programs. So when we have this new category called balances swept to general fund, $2.2 million, we're actually going to identify each specific dollar into what the old program was. And we've left these identifiers in this particular form so that we're always reminded to come back to it and keep the identities open.
And then if we elect to backfill some of these programs,
correct,
those would be unrestricted dollars going to
unrestricted programs.
Unrestricted,
yeah,
programs.
But we want to be able to identify what we're backfilling instead of just losing track of the dollars. The unique one here is the adult ed fund, and this one is because it's such huge dollars, it's kind of mind-boggling. But what we're going to do with the adult ed is they have $2 million plus in reserves that we're not allowed to sweep because it's prior to 2006 or 2007 that it was generated. What we're going to do is adult ed is going to spend that reserve next year. They're not going to have any income, none. Okay, the income's going to come in the general fund. We're going to reserve it under this type code. But ultimately, they're going to have to spend their reserves down. Once they've spent their reserves, anything they need in order to survive, they will get from this general fund piece. And it's what the state's forcing us to do. Rather than being able to put it into adult ed, we have to keep it in the general or you will change them.
Thank you.
If I could just interject that... that is the issue, that as the hit on basic aid school districts is yet to be determined, the range is huge. We would love to see it restricted to the monies that the state actually gives us, that would be the boundary for what could be taken away, but we don't know where that's going to go. And as a result, I think what we're looking at is a very different situation. We're looking at essentially the same levels of hits that we have seen our colleagues and our friends and our neighbors struggling under, but having months to respond to that through a variety of things, including their layoff process. Basic aid school districts are going to find out in the next 2 weeks and may have to respond in the next few weeks after that. So things are going to happen rapidly, and programs that existed a month ago, we may wind up not existing a month from now. And that's just the reality that we're going to have to deal with.
Mr. Unger.
Would you be comfortable if I moved forward approval of this budget this evening as opposed to waiting until next week, understanding that that what we're approving is not going to be the same thing as what we ultimately land on in a month?
You guys have that option if you're comfortable with doing that, then there is not going to be any significant changes that we're going to be. Even if we knew things tomorrow, we wouldn't have time to change the budget. That's a very cumbersome process. So if you wanted to approve the budget today, it's what's going to come back to you in 2 weeks is pretty much what you see right here, right now. So it's up to you guys.
Well, then I'm going to move approval of item number 8.
Second.
Okay.
I'm fine.
Okay. Moved by Mr. Unger and seconded by Mr. Angel. Mr. Buckman.
Chris, let me try and understand what you're saying. Because we're not going to know what the state's going to do, we'll do this as a placeholder? Is that...
That's my understanding of what Mr. Miller and Mrs. Lang have said is that... that this budget needs to be approved by June 30th. The budget that we would get this tonight or within 2 weeks is not going to be significantly different, and that any budget we approve is going to be significantly modified as soon as we understand what the state's going to be, although there will be a time period when we will have to determine what those adjustments are going to be. So I would propose we just go ahead and move this item forward with the understanding that things are going to significantly change.
Okay. So, Mr. Miller, at the point that we approve this budget, does it then go to the county superintendent? And could we?
Yeah, the process is for the board to accept the budget and sign off on it, and then we move it to the County Office of Education for review and approval.
And how can they do that without... They'll be in the same dilemma we'll be in. They won't know the real numbers.
That's correct.
Okay, I move we give it to Julian Crocker.
Well, we have a motion by Mr. Unger and a second by Mr. Angel. Is there any additional comment? Or is there public comment? I see none.
I'm just wondering whether staff has any heartburn over us moving it forward this time, or is that...
No.
No, it's what they want. Okay. Dr. Valentine.
I just want to reassure the board that the fact that we're sitting not knowing, you know, whether our cut is $1 million or $10 million, that staff is busy looking at every resource that the school district has in order to develop a menu of possible reactions that we can have that would enable us to respond as quickly as possible. There will still be extremely awkward and uncomfortable decisions made rapidly, but we're trying to mitigate that as much as possible by forethought.
Did you have a comment? Sure, Mr. Unger.
Yeah, the other thing I'd like to just talk about is our enrollment. We are not declining as rapidly. I was curious, though, about that. It says a decrease of 12 students, and I think what I recollect is the difference between 2008, 2009, and say 2007, 2008 is the addition of the special education students. I think that's what made the difference in our enrollment for that period. Looking better to me is that our ADA is increasing, which means that we're getting better.
For state and federal funding for the 2009-2010 school year. And so included in this item, you have a summary of those state and federal funds for which we are applying, as well as the completed application that includes various reports that the state requests from us. And, of course, in the back, the assurances that we are held to when we receive this money.
Oh, I beg your pardon. I'm sorry. Mr. Buckman.
Ms. Delkamp, I don't know if you can tell us, but do you have a sense of whether the total dollars or the dollars in any of these programs is up, down, or is it still sort of at the pre-current administration level? Or?
Okay. I didn't bring those notes with me, but I did check that against last year. And there are some of these funds that have gone up a little and others that have gone down a little. So I think it's almost a wash.
Thank you.
It's a good question. Okay, Mr. Millar?
What's likely to change, if anything, before this item comes back?
We may have an update on Title II expenditures, and also I'm going to come back with another signature on that page number one. We've had our DLAC committee review this consolidated application, but I learned that we also need to have our DTAC, our District Title I Advisory Committee, review it, and that's new from it's a change from years previous. And so I will be meeting with them in between, and I just wanted you to know and have the complete application that those committees will have input.
Does anyone else have any questions? Okay. Is there public comment on this issue? Seeing none, we'll move on. Thank you, Mrs. Delkiskamp. Item 12, approval of public education and government access funds. Dr. Matakovich.
Yes, thank you. Staff is very excited about the possibility of implementing this agreement with the City of San Luis Obispo. You see from the summary of the background of this agreement that we entered initially into an agreement with the city in July of 2005. We are now prepared to implement a plan that involves our schools in a video production program, beginning with the staff at Los Osos Middle School. Their after-school video club under the direction of Greg Wilcox has been well received by the students, and we feel as a PEG committee, which we formed as a result of putting together this plan, that we should begin at the middle school level with a middle school course entitled Media 3, which would be a starting place for video production program in our secondary schools. This course is listed in a later board item for your review. Also, we think with the support of these PEG funds, our ROP electronic media courses at both high school will be supported by these funds in terms of facilities and equipment. We have a professional development component, and I'd like to say two of our committee members are here, Rita Delleskamp and Eric Jarvis, our teacher on special assignment. And Eric, through some additional funding that we have, has suggested that we involve all school sites in this project and has provided a way through additional funds to be able to develop teams of teachers and students at all of our elementary schools if they participate in a professional development plan. We also have a partnership with the County Office of Education in this agreement, as they have a broadcast facility available where we could use their facility to upload our student projects onto Channel 19, which is what our goal is in this project, to be able to display our students' work. The agreement that's presented in this item has been approved by our district's attorney, Ty Green, and also the San Luis Obispo city attorney. We also have had meetings with the city clerk and the financial director, Russell, participated in that as well. And we're hopeful that we can answer any questions.
That staff and everyone involved understands the responsibilities we have to make sure we're not infringing on a copyright.
Well, we have that in place now through our acceptable use policy, and we are using videos from various sources, and we make sure that we are following those guidelines. So that would be an additional reminder, certainly, to make sure that we are following the guidelines. Yes.
Could we hear from Mr. Jarvis about what he has in mind for the schools to do? Thank you.
Very good. Thank you,
Catherine. Each of the elementary sites would receive a high-end video camera, wireless lapel microphones, and a wireless handheld microphone with receiver, a high-end computer with Adobe Premiere Elements on it for video editing. Students would participate in a workshop on proper use of the camera and using Adobe Premiere Elements properly as well. And then they'd have the opportunity to create videos on the exciting things that are happening in the school, some of the things that you heard about, the gardening projects and the performances that they're doing and all these wonderful things that we're doing at the sites. In addition to that, they would be trained, we'd be purchasing for checkout, an additional camera with additional stage microphones and a system called the TriCaster, and it's similar to what AGP is bringing here, a smaller scale video mixer and internal video editor, so that, for example, Pacheco did that wonderful play, Grease. Unfortunately, we didn't get to hear the audio, but the students would be trained on how to use the video mixer, set up two cameras and microphones, and then they would proceed to record that on video and create the video themselves, rather than, I think, you know, the examples we had were from parents, so these would be students filming that. And then assuming we had proper copyright use availability and assuming that all the proper release forms were signed by students, we have the potential to air that on San Luis Obispo County Office of Education's Channel 19. So that's in a nutshell, that's what it is.
Mr. Buckman.
Thank you. On this part of the agenda, this struggle has been going on to get this going since, I think, 2004.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to congratulate the administration and staff for finally getting hold of the PEG funds away from the city.
Well, we feel that we have a plan that we can present them, and that's where lies the delay. We needed to have a plan in place that we could support. As you'll notice in the write-up, we're not able to fund staff in this project. So providing an opportunity for our students without the funding for staffing has been a creative step on behalf of the committee, and I want you to know that the committee is representative of all of our schools in our school district. So we look forward to the opportunity to have our students displaying their work on public access stations. So.
Is it possible to use the funds for projectors and stuff like that to go to the classrooms?
Yeah, for equipment, yeah, directly related to this project. So we've worked on, we have a pretty detailed equipment list that supports the development of a classroom at Los Osos Middle School and then the two high schools and their electronic media program. And then in turn, as you read the item, if we are successful with this project, to duplicate it at Laguna Middle School and then provide the setups for all of our elementary schools and Pacific Beach.
So if we're broadcasting to our local school community inside Los Osos Middle School, can we get projectors for the teachers and have those mounted using these funds or...
You know, I don't know if we have projectors in our listing of equipment.
Is it possible to get that using these funds in the future? Is that...
And the purpose of the projectors would be?
Well, they're expensive, and if we can use this money for it, I think we can get rid of TVs and allow our teachers to broadcast not only off the projector, but then they can start doing PowerPoints and other items. I know that's what my last two schools are doing is we got rid of our TVs altogether and we're using projectors for a variety of resources.
We have a real narrow focus at this time to support the course as well as the ROP classes. And we only have so much money, and at this point we have not looked at
the Los Osos Middle School video club be considered an enrichment for advanced learners.
Currently, the club that we have right now is an after-school program that Mr. Wilcox puts together, and I would say yes, absolutely, that's enrichment, and that club will now. Be transformed into a class that you'll hear more about shortly.
Thank you. Mr. Buckman.
Would it be appropriate to use some of the funds to...
You think?
Thank you for that input.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers.
I just want to especially thank Dr. Matakovich because she's been persistent in getting this project launched, and I really appreciate it. The whole idea of digital media arts is that it... In the future, for these kids, this will be basic literacy. This is the way that they will communicate, hopefully with us, but certainly with each other. So this is really an important step for us to try to do this program. So thank you very much.
Okay. So would then the board direction to staff be to bring this back on the consent
please
agenda at the next meeting?
Please.
Okay, thank you. Oh, public comment. Yes, please.
Good evening. I'm Bill Clayton and operations officer for AGP Video. As you know, Steve and Nancy were also very much involved in making you aware of this money, and unfortunately we didn't find out that this was being brought before the board before tonight. Steve's out of town, and Nancy had to speak at another council meeting. So here I am. And although I haven't met you before, you have seen me set up equipment here. One of the things we'd like to bring up is this is also an opportunity for you to actually put equipment in this room to record these meetings. Which in the long run would also be saving you money because it would cut down on what we would be charging you. It's a one-time opportunity where you have that much money available to you at once. we've helped other communities do the same thing through the PEG access, and we'd like to see some of that money used for this purpose. Don't get me wrong, I'm very much supporting what you're doing for the education program and video. We love that. But we would like to see that taken into consideration. In regards to cutting back what, I mean, our what we charge you is pretty nominal already, but we have found that if equipment was in place, it would cut down our setup time, and we would be able to reduce what we charge you. Which one other thing you might want to look at is if you weren't paying us that money for video broadcasting, you might look at streaming these meetings over the internet and also archiving these meetings on the internet so that people can watch them on demand. We found in state meetings that we do, the Fish and Game Commission, the Coastal Commission, it's become more and more valuable to the citizens as well as the commissions. You can go back and look and really study what was said, what's going on. The transparency that you hear our governor or our president talking about, it, transparency in government, this is exactly what they're speaking of, is you guys become very visible to the community. And what we've seen is once you become visible, the community starts getting more and more involved. And all of a sudden you're hearing from all kinds of people, and they're catching it live, not a week later when it's up on TV. They can catch this stream live within 15, 20 seconds and be able to reach you immediately following the meetings and give you their opinions on things that are coming up. So it's a way to make the public very much more aware of what's going on, and then once they're aware, we found they support you more and more. So please take that into consideration with this money before it all goes to one place. This is available and won't come around again. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Unger.
I need to ask you a question.
And with technology advancing the way it is, I encourage it to be used. I mean, it's fantastic if you can get, while you're having the meeting and you're discussing an agenda item, if you can get 300 responses from people who aren't here in this room, it's will help you immensely. Any others?
Thank you.
We appreciate the input, and certainly we can look into the possibilities of what this might provide in terms of our overall plan. He's struck a little note. I probably should have said when I mentioned that we were working with the county to broadcast on Channel 19, they also will be streaming our videos on the Ed portal. For our school district, we have a page there with all of our resources for our school district, so it will be put up on the internet so that people can view them via their computer. So that will be an extra added attraction at no cost to us.
No. Okay. Thank you. Moving on to item 13, approval of additional new and modified secondary courses for 09-10. Mrs. Delkiskamp.
As Dr. Matekovich mentioned, this item is related to the previous one. Okay. And what you see in this item is that we are proposing the new course Media C3 for the middle school, and there's a description there. Dr. Matekovich has already given you the background on the club and how this will just build on that. And then you'll also see modified course proposal for our current ROP electronic media classes that we have at both San Luis Obispo High School and at Morro Bay. And the intent there is to provide additional materials and equipment so that those classes will also have the materials necessary to do the same thing, prepare videos for broadcasting through our County Office of Education onto Channel 19 and on the ETC portal.
So it has to come down. Mr. Buckman.
Thank you, Madam President. I think you may have answered my question, but what I was concerned about was if we approve this class, it may not make it into the class offerings for next year at the two high schools, and so how are we going to communicate this? But it sounds like all you're doing is modifying existing classes.
Yes, that's okay. Correct. Well, the ROP electronic media, and actually, it exists. It's being offered. Students know about it. For the media C3, I know that the administration at that site, along with the teacher, have already been recruiting students.
Thank you.
Okay, so we'll bring this item back.
Bring it back. Thank you. Item 14, solar photovoltaic energy options proposal discussion. Mr. Parker.
Good evening. I'd like to start discussing this item with a discussion about the process. And we've been trying to keep the board informed about what our notion was with respect to solar energy. And while we have been receiving proposals, and we've formed a committee to review those proposals, and we'll be meeting this Friday. After the committee meets, we would expect to advance a recommendation to the board on the June 23rd meeting. And at that point in time, we would hope that the board would give us direction to bring back a firm or firms to make direct presentations to the board about their proposals. For our committee to do its best work, we needed some questions clarified. And I'll jump to that right now. One of the questions that has become apparent that we'd like to test the board's feelings on is how the board feels about roof-mounted solar photovoltaic panels or panels mounted on covered parking lot parking structures. The item has pictures, a couple of pictures of both types of installations. The roof-mounted panels have to be approved by DSA. They have to review the structural nature of each building and go to DSA for an approval. They are generally not too visibly apparent to the public or to the students. You can see them on a roof. Sometimes they're not really visible at all. If they are mounted on the roof, on the roofs, we're talking about 800,000 square feet of roofing that could be affected, and depending upon whose proposal we're looking at, they're galvanized steel, they're pre-approved by DSA. They do change the look of the campus from the street because, well, as you saw in the photos, there's a parking lot structure. They're relatively high, 12 to 14, 16 feet above the ground level, somewhat difficult to climb up on. We get conflicting reports about whether they present a greater vandalism problem in the parking lot or on the roof. I really don't know for sure. We've heard some different discussions from the board about parking lot panels, and the committee will need to know whether the board really cares one way or the other, whether we'd like us to explore both options equally, whether we want to exclude an option. So that's one question. And I don't know, Madam President, if you want to address these questions one at a time or get them all out on the table and then try and get discussion.
Well, is anybody ready to ask questions?
So it would increase our roofing costs. We would look at both. I think we'd we'd probably need to look at both, is my sense, because what Mr. Angel points out is not all of our schools have really big parking lots.
But it is entirely possible that we would have, if we elected to go with parking lot structures, some schools don't really have that option.
Right.
However, they do have a roofing option, in which
exactly.
case we would assume a small roofing liability for that school, but the bulk of the installation could be parking lot.
The other question I had, and just kind of a funny notion, by increasing the, although I guess we could do it with the parking lots now, by increasing and providing shade for the parking lots, in the future, as water becomes more precious, could we use those to collect more water, dump them into cisterns, and then, say, irrigate some of our fields that way?
I suppose that's possible. I'm sure it would present some challenges to implement.
Well, yeah. I kind of, as I thought about it, I kind of like the option of looking at both, and I kind of like the parking lot option. And then I think you're going to ask a question about whether we should go into bond indebtedness for this?
Yes, I was going to discuss that.
Okay. Do you want me to just make a comment right now, or do you want me to wait?
Certainly. Go right ahead.
My question on that one is, if we go for an indebtedness on that, is that something that could affect our ability to borrow money for new schools?
Yes, it would. I think that there's a maximum amount of bonded indebtedness
okay.
that any agency can go into, and so it would reduce that ultimate bonding capacity of the district.
Or to repair or modernize schools, for example, if there was a tremendous natural disaster and we needed to raise money quickly, that would affect that as well, right?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Millar.
Oh, thank you. I agree with Chris, and I also think your point is well taken, Brad, that for some of our sites, we've got to have the flexibility to have the committee look at both approaches. And
Mr. Buckman.
Okay. Two things. I do agree that I think the parking lots are probably going to be a little easier to work with, and my understanding is flat roofs are very hard to maintain anyway to keep them sealed, and I don't think messing around with them is going to be a really good idea. So I'm going to lead towards the carport concept. It's my understanding that there's two ways to build the photovoltaic panels, and one of them contains extremely toxic materials and one doesn't. And so I would ask staff to be very careful when doing the bids to find out what the materials are that are within the panels, because if it cracks and leaks out, then we may have a different kind of situation.
Point taken.
Is there any greater potential for damage or vandalism on the parking lot structures?
Well, you know, it was my gut feeling that there would perhaps be. However, I got reports from some of the firms submitting proposals that they felt that actually rooftop units were more subject to vandalism because of their remoteness. I really don't know.
Okay. Yeah, it's a problem.
So I'm hearing...
Do we want to consider bonded indebtedness?
When then you service your debt, and your net savings is very similar to a PPA, but you are issuing the debt, you are going into debt, whereas with a PPA, a third party is doing it, and it does decrease the ultimate bonding capacity of the district.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. This firm has said, well, we can study and make applications go down a road that could lead to a PPA or to bonded indebtedness, and we wouldn't have to make that decision until later. However, if the board is feeling that bonded indebtedness is something we just don't want to do, then we can avoid any of those efforts.
Well, what direction would we like to give to Mr. Parker? PPA?
I just think at this stage we probably don't want to preclude investigation of both options and or perhaps any other options that crop up. Obviously, before we got ourselves too far down one direction or another, we would want to have it come to a decision point, but I'm just not comfortable precluding anything at this point.
And we can proceed on that fashion. There's no commitment. And it's possible also that the firms that the committee advances to the board are not even going to be exploring bonded indebtedness. But I know one firm is, and it's a different concept that I haven't shared with the board before. And as long as we are not committed and we can investigate all options, I tend to agree with Mr. Millar that we might as well explore it.
So then would our direction to Mr. Parker be to explore both the rooftop and the parking lot structure options, the power purchase agreement and the bonded indebtedness options? Everything's open. Go forward. Okay.
And last question is, a number of the firms that are proposing have extensive experience in residential and commercial installations and a much more limited experience with educational installations. And some of the firms have a great deal of experience with educational installations. I just want to make sure that the board would be comfortable not necessarily tipping a scale towards a firm with educational experience whenever, you know, large commercial installations, the parameters are very much the same. However, if you feel much more comfortable, then I'll direct the committee to weight that appropriately.
Yes, Mr. Unger.
I would rather retain flexibility. However, if there are significant differences between the two and the interactions that we might have to have, say, with the Department of the State Architect or our city partners, if we're looking at perhaps some environmental investigations on this because of the way that it's going to look, I think those would be important considerations to have.
Very good. So I'll relay this discussion to the committee. We're meeting this Friday, and then we will have the information back to share with the board on the 23rd. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate your guidance.
Okay. Item 15, board self-evaluation follow-up discussion.
Go ahead.
Well, I just think that the follow-up discussion that we had could be that it was a very productive session, and that I believe the board felt there was more that we could be doing. We weren't able to cover all the topics, and that we would like to meet again to have more discussion.
Well said. So then we'll report, we'll be prepared to discuss the board self-evaluation when it's complete. Okay. So now we are moving back to...
Madam Chair,
yes?
is there any particular schedule you'd like to explore with the further conversations?
Schedule? I thought that Mrs. Holmes, when she returned, was going to be sending out...
Probably did happen. It seems like a different lifetime, but I'm.
Yeah, I think that she'll be canvassing for availability.
Focus on Mondays.
Help me remember one more time, though. Availability in what time frame did we decide?
Sundays and Mondays, but we had some
near future,
sooner
fall
rather than later.
Okay.
I believe it was also after July 15th in terms of the mediators. Availability
schedule
after July 15th.
CD that was put together by the state ROP, and that will take care of that, because we're not going to try that tonight. Not till we get some PEG money. And I'm trying to get back to number two. I may have ripped it out of my book arm. I would entertain, I'd be happy to table this till the next meeting in light of the hour.
Okay, so we'll bring back the ROP report then at the next meeting, please. Board reports.
It's been a busy week for all of us, and I've been happy to see a lot of the board members being able to go to things out in the schools. I was able personally to go to the Del Mar Open House, and then in addition, they did a little reception for Linda Olson, Joan Talka, and the custodian there too. I was able to go to the Coast Music presentation for the elementary schools. It was Monarch, Baywood, and Del Mar together. It was really neat to hear. And thanks to Mrs. Yeo and I believe Ms. Galvin, who are the Coast Music coordinators. Several of us went to the Laguna EL recognition last night. John Spatafore and I were at the San Luis High and Laguna Middle School choir concert at Temple Beth David the other night. And then today was a very special day. It was a special education graduation. Dr. Valentine was there. Jackie Kirk-Martinez was there. Bonnie Parsons was there. San Luis High had one student that graduated with the county office classes. I was able to be there. As always, it was very touching. And I wanted to thank two people for that. I wanted to thank the Elks Lodge in San Luis Obispo for really providing a great venue for the graduation, and really the cooperation that they gave to the County Office of Education was wonderful. And then lastly, I'd like to thank the Chris Jesperson Memorial Society for their monetary donation toward the graduation. They actually paid the Elks for the rental of the hall, and without their help, I'm not sure if we could have done it this year. So Chris Jesperson Society supports special education programs for severely handicapped students throughout our county. And it's named after Chris Jesperson, who was a state senator in San Luis Obispo County in the 30s and I believe 40s. It was his idea to have Chris Jesperson School, the first school for essentially severely handicapped students in the United States here in San Luis Obispo. If you go by Chris Jesperson, you'll see a tree that was planted by Goodwin Knight in his honor. His daughter, Pearl Toma, is really a pillar of our community, and she was there today, and just thanks to them for their support.
Thank you. Any other, Mr. Angel?
I have bumper stickers I'd like to hand out if anybody wants. It's for Stand Up for Public Education, provided by the American Association for School Administrators. And in this time when education is taking way more than their fair share of cuts, you know, it's good to get this out. And I might even have to put one of these on my truck at the private school I work at and feel the grief or hear the grief.
Well, I had the opportunity to join Dr. Valentine, Pete Zodovich, and staff members from Morbe High School in Anaheim at where they accepted the California Distinguished School Award for the second time. And it was a real honor for me to be there with them and feel proud, and feel very proud for their achievement. So although I'm not able to get out and about as much as some board members, that was an opportunity that it was a wonderful opportunity that I was able to attend that, and I'm very grateful. Mr. Buckman.
Madam President, I was very fortunate to attend the Laguna EL graduation. I am always struck by how inadequate I am when I can hear a middle school student speaking in two languages, and I barely can speak one.
Dr. Valentine.
Just want to echo what we talked about earlier with respect to the budget in terms of preparing the board, that as soon as we know what the magnitude of the cuts that we will be experiencing, there will be some fairly extraordinary things that will have to happen quickly. There may be a necessity for special board meetings in order to consider proposals and so forth. I would also announce that
in our area, Allison Nyday, who's one of our delegates, has been very involved in this. It would provide for parcel tax elections with a 55% majority instead of a 66% majority. Given these terrible economic times, I think it's one more way that we can provide local control for our own finances and revenues if we choose at some point to go forward with a proposal for a parcel tax.
Okay. Mr. Millar.
I think that it's advisable for us to support this and have the flexibility, hopefully get the additional flexibility to meet the future. But I would hasten to add to the public that we do not currently have a plan to or a plan to look at a parcel tax, but I do think it would be helpful to have the flexibility to handle the next few years.
Okay. So we had a motion by Mr. Buckman, second by Mr. Unger, and it's a roll call vote. Mrs. Outcall?
Mr. Angel?
Aye.
Mr. Buckman?
Aye.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers?
Aye.
Mr. Millar?
Aye.
Mrs. Roger?
Aye.
And Mr. Unger?
Yes.
So that would be 6 in favor and 1 absent. Pardon me. Okay, we have public hearing. Item 5, proposed 2009-2010 agreement with California School Employee Association, CSEA, Chapter 89.
This item and the next two represent bringing forward to the board contracts with a variety of labor organizations with whom we have tentative agreements as part of the process. Prior to the board taking action later in this agenda, a public hearing is made available for the public to comment if they have comments.
Thank you. And the public hearing is now open. Anyone who wishes to address the board on this, please come forward. Seeing no one, then we will close the public hearing. Item 6, proposed, again a public hearing, proposed 2008-2011 agreement with San Luis Coastal Teachers Association, SLCTA. Public hearing is now open. Anyone wishing to address the board? Seeing no one, the public hearing is closed. Pardon me. Item 7, proposed 2009-2010 agreement with Service Employees International Union, SEIU, Local 620.
I believe Mayor and President Rogers would like to open the public hearing on this item. And if there's anyone who would like to speak to this item, please come forward. I would recommend that the President close the hearing since no one has come forward. And I think that she's in agreement with that.
Busy shooting my water up my nose in here.
What's that now? Don't look at me when you're doing it.
I beg your pardon.
You've been working hard tonight, man.
Okay, so we've opened and closed three public hearings. We've moved on now to the action consent agenda. Pardon my voice. Please let me know if you'd like any of these to be pulled. Item 16, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. Item 17, approval of 2009-2010 agreement with California School Employee Association, CSEA, Chapter 89. Item 18, approval of 2008-2011 agreement with San Luis Coastal Teachers Association, SLCTA.
Please pull.
Item 19, approval of 2009-2010 agreement with Service Employees International Union, SEIU, Local 620. Item 20, approval of proposed salary increases for positions exempt from the merit system. Item 21, acceptance of donations. 22, disposition of surplus property. Item 23, approval of warrants and payroll. Item 24, approval of instructional materials adoption recommendations for geometry and algebra 2. Item 25, approval of instructional materials adoption recommendations for home economics. Item 26, approval of instructional materials recommendations for new or modified secondary courses for 2009-2010. Item 27, approval of summer field or study trips.
Paul, please.
Well, and I'd like to see that come forward. Mark?
I agree with Mr. Angel. I pulled it for a different reason. I'm very excited about the fact that that this agreement eliminates step one and two, basically giving us a more competitive entry-level salary for our teachers. And I just wanted to compliment everybody that was involved that made this possible. And I think we'll be able to attract even better teachers.
So I'll move approval of item 18.
Okay, moved by Mr. Buckman, seconded by Mr. Angel. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 6-0. And then item 27, I believe you pulled, Mr. Buckman?
Yes. Just very quickly, as I looked down this list of activities for our students, I was very excited until I started to see that some of these were camps in Utah and all over the West Coast. And I was able to call and contact Mrs. Matakovich and be assured that any child that wanted to attend these, that there was funding for it. I was worried that some children may not be able to attend based on funding. So I'm very, again, proud of the district that we make this available to all students. I also asked about CIF used to have a dead time when certain during the summer, certain athletic programs were not allowed to practice, and I was concerned because it looked like we were practicing. However, again, Mrs. Pentakovich came to the rescue, and CIF has done away with dead periods. So I move approval of item 27.
Okay, and I called Mr. Miller and asked about the funding sources for these field trips, and they're funded primarily through site funds. Isn't that what you told me, Mr. Miller? And so the money is available for all of these for this year, which was a concern of mine. Next year may not be the same story, but I'll second your motion. So motion by Mr. Buckman.
I
Mr. Angel.
Noticed CATA is missing for our ASB students. Sometime down the road, I'd like to see if we can ever get that going.
I don't know what that is.
California Association of Directors of Activities and California Association of Student Leaders. They do a wonderful camp in Santa Barbara for our high schoolers and middle schoolers.
Are we aware of that, Dr. Matakovich? Have you ever heard?
We are now.
Okay.
Kathy was, Miss Ahern was aware of it, but yes, said there was not a lot of funding at her site for that.
Okay. So, let's see. You pulled this, Mr. Buckman. You've moved approval?
Yes, please.
You've moved. I've seconded. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes unanimously. Okay. Advance agenda.
Yes, Madam Chairman. I would like to propose a potential agenda item as a follow-up to today's item having to do with closing the achievement gap while supporting advanced learners. And I would say that this is related to our strategic plan and that it's about making sure that all of our learners' needs are being addressed, that the urgency is just exactly that, to make sure that they're being addressed in a timely fashion, and that the expectations for the staff would be that what we would be examining here would be at all three levels, I think, at the elementary level, to just make sure that all elementary schools are doing the same, taking the same steps that the three elementary schools we heard from today are taking, both in their professional learning communities and their RTIs, to make sure that students who could be identified as accelerated learners are being identified and being provided with appropriate curricula.
at the middle school level, that we examine the impact of our efforts to close the achievement gap on both proficient and advanced learners, in particular in the sciences, the social sciences, both science and social sciences at both middle schools. And at the high school level, just to check in with the embedded math program that was started this year at San Luis High School and see where we stand with that program at the end of this school year.
Can you just
I'd like to hear from the math department. I spoke with Mr. Cross today, and he said they're gathering data based on this year's experience and that the jury is out at this moment.
On nominating an outstanding legislator of the year. And that's an award that CSBA gives. And I don't know if everybody got one of these. If not, I'll give this to Ilsa and ask that it be sent out so that we can consider whether we would like to nominate somebody or not. It's a board nomination, if that would be in interest of the boards.
Point of clarification, the key communicators idea, Mr. Unger, if that's the same thing as potential. Can you share again then, please?
Sure. This was actually on the May 26th agenda, scheduled meetings with public officials, and that was with the board meeting with city and county officials to explore areas of interest and mutual interests. Thank you.
I don't remember that item, Chris. Was that your item? Okay, Dr. Valentine, then that will go back on the advance agenda. Do you recall that item?
I remember Mr. Unger bringing forward the possibility. It was in the context of, do you remember what, Chris, it was a larger item that we were talking about. Was it budget and common interest? Oh, I know, it was with the Laguna
Right,
but sports thing, yeah.
But this was, I was not trying to limit this to the Laguna sports. This was us trying to get together with members of the city council, and local city councils, and the county board of supervisor to discuss items of mutual interest, because I think we have items of mutual interest that we should be talking about.
And just a question, is it the board's sense that that came forward as an advanced agenda item or as a comment in the conversation?
It was on the advanced agenda on the 26th.
On the blue sheet or in the update?
On the white sheet from May 26th.
Okay. And would you propose that they would come and attend our meeting, or how
that's something that we could talk about, but that we as perhaps boards, if we could, I think, have some kind of a summit where we could get together and talk about issues of concern that are important to all of the public entities in this county and in this area. So that was my thinking on that.
Okay.
That's what I had hoped we would be able to look at, going along with the idea that this is becoming more and more important for all of us.
Are we looking for a second?
No, I think because it was already on, I think we're just asking.
I don't think it was on as much on. So if we're going to make it, let's make it.
I'll second Chris's motion to make it an agenda item.
Right. One of the other things that fell off was the combination classes in the strategic plan was also missing from June 9th agenda items, not yet scheduled.
Okay, so if it was there, then we'll have it reappear. We don't need to to move it and second it again. Okay, well then, are there any other advance agenda items?
Can I just had one more point of clarification on the potential meeting with public officials piece. The conversation, help out my memory, the conversation about the Laguna Middle School Parks and Recreation Program prompted the discussion that there may be other things that we would want to discuss with other folks. But the thing I need to help my memory on is I thought that conversation actually occurred on May 26th.
No, well,
which, if it did, meant that this item referred to something else.
But. Yeah, I have a different recollection. Perhaps you and I could talk to each other and
it's when we're both conscious.
Exactly.
Perfect.
I have no recollection of it, Chris, so I'd like to know what it's about.
Do you want to know right now? Could we save it for the next meeting, maybe?
Well, I'd be delighted. Okay, so you and Dr. Valentine will figure out what it's about, and then you'll clue the rest of us in at the next meeting.
Yes.
Okay, then if there's nothing further, we are now adjourned.
No, okay.